the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Thank you for joining us. We're streaming today. We're on the WGN radio app. We're on the stream. We're any place you can find us on TuneIn. You can ask your smart speaker to say play WGN radio, and you find us that way as well. And Justin Kaufman is in.
Hi, Anna. I'm in for Ro today. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Nice. Rick Pearson is also here. Yeah. He got here early because he's rearing to go for Election Day tomorrow in the city. A lot to talk about.
Let's get it over with. Come on.
Oh, really? Spoken like a grizzly reporter in the city of Chicago. Get it over with. And we were just talking about April Fool's Day jokes and why people still fall for them.
Yeah.
I think if they get you up early in the morning is when you really can get people.
What I have a problem with is not falling for it. It's when they fall for it and then you tell them it's a joke and they go, I'm still mad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they just can't handle the fact that why would you even try to joke? It's April Fool's. You're supposed to. That's the whole idea.
It comes with the territory.
It's with the territory.
It does. Catches you off guard. Kind of fun. Didn't the mayor pull a little April Fool's joke today?
He did he put out a press release that said that the oversized scissors factory was staying in Chicago and doubling its business in some form
because
for rubbing
kidding. For all the business.
For all the business. Yeah. So they were.
He also said he was filing Freedom of Information Act requests about himself and that his new favorite four letter word that begins with an F is FOIA. FOIA. So he was he's doing that as well.
Mayor Bits.
He's having fun on the way last
he's
few
been
days.
He's stung by a few of those FOIA requests. So
Certainly has. We're going to talk a little bit about Election Day coming up because we do have the mayor's race and want to get Rick's thoughts about that. We've got some aldermanic races, of course, treasurer's race, and some general stuff to get to. The Jussie Smollett situation continues to make news here in Chicago as you had two dueling protests today. You had the FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police, out there in front of City Hall protesting Kim Fox and the way her office handled, or they would say mishandled, the whole case. And then on the other side, you had Jesse Jackson and Father Flager marching against the FOP. And it was this interesting conflict. We've got some audio of that as well that we'll be playing for you, where the guy got heated, it got tense out there. But I wasn't sure that the Jesse Jackson folks were supporting Kim Fox so much as they were against some of the police policies.
I
and that's
a,
what the sign said, and that's what a lot of the interviews seemed to indicate.
I Father Flager say that this had to do with that there was misplaced to all this anger towards Kim Fox, and that it wouldn't be the case if this was not a strong African-American woman leading the state's attorney's office. So you can argue that one way or the other, but that's, I think, there's a little bit of that from the counter-protest that was happening today.
It just seems we've heard the stories changing a little bit out of her office, and it's been hard to keep track of all the facts coming our way. And the latest twist that I saw over the weekend, the Tribune was reporting that, and a few other outlets was reporting that Kim Fox gave an interview saying that my office believed that, and actually she said this in an op-ed piece, my office believed that securing a conviction was not certain in this case, even though she had told the Sometimes, days before, on Wednesday, I believe, that we have a very strong case here, and that her second-in-command had said they had a strong case, and there's no exoneration here, and yet Jussie Smollett's people and his defense attorneys are saying he's been, you know, he's innocent. So it just seems like the conflicting information there is what makes most of us say, let's get a story, and let's understand what happened, because you are an elected official, and you are in charge of administering justice or helping to do that for us on the behalf of the people and on behalf of that grand jury, which found those felony indictments.
I think at this point the story becomes just about that word justice and what the expectation is. If we are, as a society, want to make sure that there is equal and justice for all, as it says in different places on our money.
Different places is what we should believe in.
But the question just becomes, you know, was justice served? And if it wasn't served, who's accountable?
That's it. I think it is more than just about Jussie. And I think it's, you know, you could say, well, Jussie might have gotten off easy here. Did we really think he was going to go to prison? No. It doesn't seem that a class 4 felony warrants that in most cases. We get that piece of it. You get that, you know, most of their resources should be devoted to violent crimes. And that's where you want the state's attorney's office to have its focus. But I think that the whole nature of the way this was handled made you question not necessarily just Jussie, but question the way her office handles things and the whole sealing of this. While she says Kim Fox says that was not her request, they certainly didn't fight it. And when that was brought up in court to seal this after so many things that people who are familiar with prosecution and different lawyers groups and even the Illinois group that has come out, I think the Prosecutors Bar Association here in Illinois came out most recently and said this is not normal, this is not the ethical standard, and they have questions about it, that there's enough there that you question how her office handled it beyond what happened to Jussie.
You've got the, and it's funny because I'm in for Roe today because Roe's out, but you know, Roe is like, he's Mr. Outrage on this. He's, you know, he flipped out. I could hear him screaming from this room all the way to my office the other day. I don't know. I feel somewhat ashamed, and maybe it's me, but I don't. I have not connected to the story. I have not connected with the outrage. I have not connected in a way that I feel like I have. Like it has made me emotional, and I don't know. I kind of shrug my shoulders. Like, okay, so celebrity got off for faking a crime that he got beat up. I'm embarrassed by it as a Chicagoan because I don't want our name dragged through the mud. But when it comes to the semantics of whether or not he should have gone to jail or what the case was at the prosecutor's office, I got other things to pay attention to in my life. Like, I just feel like, okay, all right, good. And I'm still not sold why this is a front page news story a week after the fact and why we continue to pour gasoline on it.
I think it's a fair point. We should ask the Fraternal Order of Police.
I know I'm in the minority because everyone loves it. I mean, the papers go with it because people hit and click, and you know, Rick.
Well,
but,
I mean,
I'm in the minority.
You're a cranky old man that I am, but I was angry just because I felt that here is this city that on a national stage has taken so many justifiable criticisms over things, and I felt like the city got used by some actor that I'd never heard of, and in the initial stages of this, you know, from the ludicrousness of this is MAGA country, which I thought when they couldn't find the alleged guys who beat him up, it shouldn't be that hard in Chicago.
Right.
For MAGA country. I think the lineup wouldn't even get to 8, okay? Right? But I mean, I did not like the embarrassment that we suffered because, okay, there's a lot of crime in Chicago, so I can stage this thing and take advantage of the city of Chicago.
And kind of fan the flames of racial divisions
in the city.
Here's
what I have from the media part that drives me crazy on this story. One, he told a story that we all had scratched and we weren't sure was true.
Mm-hmm. From day one.
Right, from day one. Then there was all sorts of leaks coming out of the police department and a really, if anything, unorthodox approach to coming forward that he was a hoax. So the police department, there were questions for me saying, why is this out in the media? Well, they did so many things that were out of order from the way that the police usually handle cases. And then you have a third thing, which is the
prosecutor. I would stop you there. I think police knew that this was a heater case. And
they leaked more than Rick Fawcett in this story that I've never seen the police department
code for
do
something?
That. But yeah, exactly.
My personal feeling is that the attorneys were leaking more than the police department was.
But they were saying unofficial police sources. They leaked more. And I'm not saying that that's wrong because that's how the media gets the truth, but I was just surprised. Usually you don't get. And then the third story, which we don't know, is the prosecutor dropped his case. So I just feel like as the public, we have been given half truths and little parts of the story all the way along. And the idea for me to now make up my mind on what I think about Kim Fox or what I think about Jussie Smollett, give me the full story. From the beginning of what happened, and then I'll make my judgment.
That's going to be hard to do now that is sealed. It just seems as
But
she's welcoming a thorough review. That was part of the op-ed piece she wrote. She's welcoming a thorough review of what happened in her office, and I think that would be warranted, and it would help a lot of us understand.
Yeah. Well, look about two instances where the term exoneration has been thrown around involving issues and lack of transparency from the Mueller report to what we're dealing with now.
Yeah.
And it is kind of ludicrous to here we are on election day eve of electing a historic new mayor for Chicago, that we're having counter rallies over the efficiency of the state's attorney, who's not on the ballot.
Well, and it's a nice segue because her political mentor Tony Preckwinkle is on the ballot, and in the mayor's race, we want to get your thoughts. So let's talk about that a little. little bit. We will circle back with the FOP and be talking about the Kim Fox rallies and more on that. But Rick Pearson, this is one of the first times I can remember in my history here in Chicago about there is no anointed heir for mayor, and you've got two candidates who... Who could have predicted this a year ago, 2 years ago, that this is where we would be?
No, I didn't either. And you know, there was the feeling, obviously, that Rahm couldn't run for a third term. Just the baggage issues like Laquan McDonald, it had just gotten so overwhelming. There's no way that he could run. But when you had that scattershot 14-candidate field where there was a candidate for every different food group in Chicago... when you get a race aside, and I still think, you know, down the road, this is something to think about, mm-hmm. is the fact that, you know, we're looking at a ballot where 2/3 of Chicagoans didn't vote for either one of these people, and they're going to be mayor.
Good point.
And, you know, there's talk about ranked choice voting and those kinds of things, which I'd love to see an exploration of, because mm-hmm. did we really need, after the 14 candidates, to now come down to this and all the money it takes to put on an election? Again, turnout, latest estimate now for turnout is going to be roughly what it was in February.
Which was a disappointingly low number, 35%. Right?
And I assumed, with two African-American candidates on the ballot, that would, you know, stir up some excitement in the West and
who's
South
sitting
side.
Out? Who do you think is sitting out? What part of Chicago doesn't want to vote for this mayor?
I think whites.
Yeah?
I mean, Jerry Joyce has endorsed Lori Lightfoot, and certainly that helps with his pocket, perhaps. But I do think... You know, there's a definite unease among whites of which candidate here. And I think it's they know Toni Preckwinkle and they don't like her. And I know I'm being broadly, speaking broad generalities here. But they don't know Lori Lightfoot and they're not sure they can trust her.
I just wonder.
And then I don't know about Hispanic vote either, because, you
know. Chuy Garcia has endorsed Lori Lightfoot.
Right.
He certainly has a following.
And Susana Mendoza. Her as well. But I don't know that necessarily translates into turnout.
Mm-hmm. Toni Preckwinkle is the Cook County Democrat Party chair.
Correct.
And you've seen more, I think, than I've ever seen, fallout, or people not falling in line, if you will, behind the Cook County chair. And, you know, think about when you talk about Jerry Joyce and going for somebody else, or the Northwest or Southwest side, or politicians in every which way. But why is that? What, is it just because people don't like Toni Preckwinkle? But it seems like the way Chicago politics works, you fall in line behind whoever is the anointed leader.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we don't know what the result is going to be, but for Preckwinkle to lose, I think, is a stunning repudiation of the Cook County Democratic organization and organization politics. Anna, you said, you know, we don't have an heir apparent or mm-hmm. whatever. We don't have an incumbent. Yet, in many respects, I think Toni Preckwinkle is viewed as the incumbent because of she's represents the political establishment. And so, you know, in a change election, you don't want to be an incumbent, or you don't want to be perceived as right. establishment. And I think that's really the kind of headwinds I think that she's been facing in this all along. And when you look at some of the Democrats that are part of the organization that have left the ranch and gone over to Lightfoot, I think, frankly, their fingers, they can tell where the wind is blowing.
Right. Does that have an impact on what might happen to her leadership if she loses?
To Preckwinkle? Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, should Preckwinkle lose the mayoral race, goes back to county board as county board president, I think she's extremely vulnerable. And I can't say that, you know, I've heard talk of, you know, trying to depose her, but... You know, it's Chicago.
It happened to Joe Berrios. I mean,
well,
lost.
Everybody looks for...
Yeah.
Well, and of course, she has that baggage of doing the party line and supporting Joe Berrios for assessor, despite all of the stories and reports about assessment problems. You know, Franz Kagi wins that. But that seems like kind of part of the beginning of the end kind of things here for the organization.
I'm fascinated by it because I feel like half of this is about a challenge to her as a leader of that establishment.
Sure.
And so by...
Not even really about the city.
No, I mean, not at all. It has to do with Democrat insider politics.
Right. It really is. And then it's also that kind of trickles into some of the aldermanic races too. We want to talk about that in a moment. We're back with Rick Pearson, but we want to check in with Kim Gordon right now, see what's coming up bottom of the hour in the news.
And a British lawmaker is voting again on a Brexit strategy.
Dawn Show with me, Anna DeVonsis. We've got Justin Kaufman in with us today.
Loving
Happy
it.
To have you. And Rick Pearson.
Rick Rowland here.
We're Rick Rowland with Rick. And Rick. Well, it's the perfect little... That's your new song. I think you should... This should be your walk-on music.
Oh, that's too bright for Sunday and Sunday morning, I gotta tell you. We can't shock everybody that fast.
We're talking mayor's race, and the election day is tomorrow. Of course, early voting is still... possible for you if you'd like to take advantage of that, but
no way, you got to do it on the morning of. You got to go day up.
Get your sticker, your wristband.
Election judges, they love me.
Yeah, they do, Justin.
Nobody
you're big
got,
with them.
The
big.
I vote in the senior
donuts.
Center. I come in there. I got a lot of bits. We
bring
fun.
Donuts and coffee.
No, do
I don't
you?
Bring,
I don't one of those.
On. I bring my. I bring
suck
my
up
smile.
To him.
I bring my smile.
They love it. Well, I was struck today watching television all day and listening to radio, and you know, the closing arguments, if you will, for these mayoral candidates. If you look at their ads, at least Lori Lightfoot's TV ad. It's very positive. Shine a light on the city. Change, reform. Let's change this political machine. Let's move forward for the people of Chicago. You saw Preckwinkle with that very negative ad at still out. It was running quite a bit today about the four children killed in that tragic fire and pointing a finger in the direction of Lori Lightfoot. Something many people have said is beyond the fray. It's not something that should be part of this election conversation.
Yeah, just the fact of the tenor of the ads tell you a lot about where the candidates see things going. And when you're at the point, again, you know, she's not the incumbent, but she's Toni Preckwinkle, and people know who she is. She is still placed in that position of trying to define her opponent, which that's the first thing you do in a campaign, especially in this should have been from out of the blocks with Toni Preckwinkle, because Lori Lightfoot is still, you know, was still largely an unknown. I kind of look at this election in some respects, and I don't mean it in an ideological sense, but kind of like Bruce Rauner against Pat Quinn. And that Pat Quinn was a known quantity, but people were just, you know, had questions and weren't necessarily satisfied. And Bruce Rauner had done a masterful job of making himself into a political whiteboard that people could put their hopes, dreams, and aspirations on. Now, we saw how that turned out. But...
Well, let's stop you there, Rick. I mean, Lori Lightfoot is promising great change, busting the political machine, changing city council, making, you know, moving things forward for the people in every ward of the city. Do you doubt that she'd be able to achieve what she's saying she can do?
Well, I think certainly there'll be some council resistance, despite the fact of what we may see some change in some of these aldermanic seats. I don't think it's going to be of the magnitude of change that is going to really... The other thing, too, with Lori being an attorney and in the circles she's traveled... She actually was responding at one point in one of the debates to the Smollett issue and Rahm Emanuel's outrage, and she said, "I would, as mayor, take a more measured tone." And there are plenty of people that like Rahm Emanuel's outrage. In fact, I remember writing off the first response that he gave and called it a whitewash and tweeted that out, and somebody said, well, if anybody knows what a whitewash is, it'd be Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah, sort of set him up there.
But you know, this whole idea of affecting change, it sounds good, and Toni is right. Change takes a long time. I don't think Lori Lightfoot would necessarily be able to change things overnight or change things as quickly as those who want change would like to see them, because it's just not how the system works. And that's not just the Cook County Democratic system or the city. It's just not how the process works, because you're dealing with so many factors involved in trying to make change in any step that you make in government.
When we come back, why don't we can we talk about the aldermen? You stick around for that. I'm fascinating some of these races.
Me too.
A lot of money being pumped into some of these.
Absolutely.
And some longtime incumbents who are sort of falling, it seems, due to that desire for change against some political upstarts, some things.
And some laziness, too.
And some laziness, all right.
Some laziness.
Laziness.
Yes.
We want to talk about laziness and more with Rick Pearson as Election Day approaches tomorrow. But let's check in with Kim Gordon to see check in and get the news here on WGN.
Brian's having some fun today.
They're playing your song again, Rick Pearson. That's the Foo Fighters with Rick Astley. Something works like it works for you, Rick. It works. I can see you dancing at the Billy Goat election night to that. Woo!
When cutting all the votes are counted and the stories have been written, yes.
And the dancing stuff.
And the dancing stuff.
Speaking of Billy Goat, maybe this is a perfect opportunity to plug your event, Kevin.
Hosting election night tomorrow night, 7 to 10 at the Billy Goat under Michigan Avenue, 430 North Michigan. We're going to have a ton of great people out, pundits, analysis, politicians, candidates. Everybody who's involved in both the general and the runoff will be there. We'll be talking about the new look city council, which might be a nice way to dovetail into our next convo here. There are some incumbents who are in this runoff that you would not expect to be there. Let's start with the 40th Ward, Pat O'Connor, who is a floor leader for Rahm Emanuel.
Right.
He's a ton of money in that race.
Yes, I mean, I was looking at his past. Mm-hmm. He ran unopposed up to 2015. Right. He had nobody. Right. Now he's in the fight of his career.
And gets in a runoff on top of it. I mean, here again, part of that establishment. And, you know, the fact of the idea of taking dislike about Rahm is something that is very a salable point here. And, you know, he wasn't even telling the media where his election night party is going to be.
No, he's a hard guy to get a hold of. He's going up against a community activist and former hip-hop artist, Andre Vasquez.
Yes.
But he has a ton of money. He has $700,000 cash on hand, and it's seeing itself play out in a lot of flyers, a lot of ads. There's a new ad or a new Facebook post he put out saying how close he was to Harold Washington, which is hard to imagine since he was part of the 29 with Verdoliak. There's another ad about putting some of the lyrics from Andre Vasquez's hip-hop career on a flyer. Right. I mean, he's really going nasty to win this thing.
Yeah, and old school. It's old school, using a little bit of the new technology of Facebook and Instagramming, but also the direct mail pieces are just absolutely flying. And, you know, it's all about getting that 5 seconds of attention span on a mailer, on a Facebook post, something like that, that you'll retain when you go vote.
Ultimately, you think, Rick, that's going to play a big part in this, or do you think that this sort of anti-incumbent fever or, a desire to create reform in our city is a bigger factor?
Well, every ward is its own politics.
That's true.
And it's hard not to remember that. But that having been said, when you have a mayoral race playing out against that overall thematic of change, it certainly plays a part lower down. And even the fact of getting to this point where you have 15 aldermanic runoffs with some of these veteran incumbents points to that overwhelming desire for change.
The other one that I'm so into is the 30th Ward, which is Alderman Ariel Rebeyras, who's been there since, I don't know, 90s, right? He's been a Mayor Daley and a Mayor Emanuel supporter and ally. And Jessica Gutierrez, who is the daughter of Luis Gutierrez, a former congresswoman, is running against him. It actually tied in the general. I mean, it was close to her winning that thing.
Right.
And the momentum seems to be with the challenger because of her name and because of the change movement. But where are we at with the 30th Ward? Because that seems to be a big one.
I mean, I think this is going to be one of the last ones that we know about, that, you know, Rebeyras is hanging in there. You know, we're getting the last day allegations of dirty tricks on both sides on our emails, which is always fun because it's like, couldn't you have done that a week ago?
Right.
You know, I can't do anything with this now. But I mean, it'll be interesting to see, you know, the Gutierrez persona, how true that holds here, because as you said, Rebeyras has been around forever.
I did a piece on it that Gutierrez and Rebeyras were allies.
Sure.
And Gutierrez was essentially the boss of that neighborhood, and Rebeyras was handing out or doing petition gathering for him. Mm-hmm. He has served that establishment well, and he feels kind of stabbed in the back, if you will, the fact that Jessica's even running.
Sure. And all, you've got that factor, plus, you know, how Gutierrez steps down, and you've got Chuy now as the heir for Congress there, and how does that play into the Latino politics and the mix between the Mexicans and the Puerto Ricans. And I mean, it's just...
And the hipsters. The Logan Square hipsters are moving north into that war.
Well, that's true. That's true.
It's a great...
Yes. I mean, all of this is at play. I mean, and you know, this... when this is all said and done, I want to take a look back, too, at these places that have had just rapid gentrification and see how much of a factor that has played into things. I mean, when you look at the vote, the age vote splits, and you look at it in some of these wards about, because you know the older voters vote, and they all want things back the way they used to be.
Right.
Another ward that I think is really interesting is the 5th Ward, which would be down in Hyde Park and South Shore. That's going to be Leslie Harrison, who's been a longtime Progressive Caucus member. And she's in a runoff against Will Calloway, who you'd recognize to be the guy who was up front after the Laquan McDonald verdict, the Jason Van Dyke conviction. He seems to be, he's got a little bit of traction there, but
he has a lot of traction.
And he's representing a young, disenfranchised vote.
Right. No, that everybody is acknowledging that Leslie Harrison is in some serious difficulty in the 5th Ward, and that is one of the key ones to watch. You know, I we were talking, you know, the lazy segment.
Let's get back to that. What was the lazy segment?
Well, that was, I mean, Rod Sawyer in the 6th, Brookins in the 21st, mm-hmm. playing the old school. This is like, well, I don't have to go work hard because, you know, my people will come out and they'll be for me. And except in this day and age, it don't work that way. And, you know, I was talking to Brian Bernadoni from the Realtors yesterday on the show, and he said it's almost like, as much as we've got all this great technology, it's almost like the techniques of that technology, it's back to old school. It's the best way, word of mouth. You know, if you see what friends are doing, you can spread the word better than yard signs, but you still got to go knock on the doors.
Yeah.
Especially in a low turnout election, you see that all the time. And I guess that's my question for you, Rick. A lot of people are looking at these polls and saying, well, Lori Lightfoot could run away with this, and that this could be an early election night. But then you look at Preckwinkle and where her support is coming from. And she was out at the churches this weekend. She's got strong union support. Teachers Union gave her $100,000. I mean, she's got some of those troops really motivated to come out, and those people do tend to vote in our city.
Yeah,
it makes a difference.
But the question, even in a low turnout, is who turns out.
Right.
And yeah, there's great expectations that for Tony's areas of strength will be in the 18 largely African American wards, and that's where a lot of her strength came to get in the runoff.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you look at the fact that if it wasn't Lori Lightfoot running, Preckwinkle probably would have gotten the lakefront. You know, as the progressive in the race, and the fact that the lakefront is, that's Lori's vote.
That includes white liberals, that includes the gay community.
Right.
There's a lot that Tony Preckwinkle relied on in past elections she can't rely on this.
Right.
Time.
So, I mean, it's here again. The one thing, and it's been very interesting to watch because you kind of saw it initially and now it's kind of faded, was when you had 14 candidates, each of them knew all they needed was just one little sliver of support. And if they mm-hmm. really pounded that, they could get into second place, mm-hmm. get into the runoff. Then you win, you're one of the two. Now you got to kind of appeal to the city at large, including that 70% of the voters that didn't vote for you. But now, you know, we've kind of seen Tony in particular, although in some respects Lori doing it too, but Tony going back to try to shore up the base.
Yeah.
And at this stage of the game, if you have to shore up the base, that's not a good sign. And of course, you had Lori working African American churches too, but also in a way to try to hold Tony's margins down.
And
kind of playing a defense.
I thought it was very interesting too, and we get the inside politics, but I thought it was interesting that we saw our friend Cook County board member Bridget Gaynor mm-hmm. introducing Tony Preckwinkle at her win in the general.
Right.
But that's a sign that she needs those Lakeview wards.
That was the old guess.
Yeah, she needs those Lakeview wards to come for Tony Preckwinkle, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
I you know, there's no evidence that it is.
Right.
But John Cass says we should be paying attention because he doesn't count Tony Preckwinkle. Your comrade over at the Trib.
Well, I don't, you know, if 2016 taught us anything, you don't count anybody out. Just by being on the ballot, you got a chance. And I'm certainly, I would not count Lori Preckwinkle or Tony Preckwinkle out. Tony, obviously, with, you know, we can talk about, you know, is this the end of the machine, whatever.
Well, I think that is a question.
But the machine's still there.
But so you
the machine has been on kind of a losing slide for a long time. particularly because of patronage and consent decrees and those kinds of...
And because of a federal probe exposing some of the key players, always, the key political powerhouses machine, in the city, right? And who might be connected with them and what else is to come there.
Although some of the guys you and I know, they probably, you know, they're happy if they're mentioned on that because that shows how important that they are. They'd be the only ones who'd ever want to be on a wiretap,
It does.
I'm on the tap.
Oh, gosh. Be careful what you wish for. This does feel like a moment in time, though, here.
It does. It does. And you know, well, one, it is a moment in time, regardless of the winner.
History will be made.
Yes. And you know, there are elements of the Herald victory that you can kind of feel in this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do think for the city, there should be some sense of pride. And when I wrote about the chase for the African-American vote in the city between the two candidates, it all kind of came down to, yeah, I'm for her or I'm for her, whatever. But at the end, it was like, you know, we won't lose either way.
Hmm. Look where how far we've come.
For a black community, you know? And that's a fascinating dynamic to think of.
I think it'd be interesting when we're done with this election, and this will, I'll put this on the backs of the Tribune. You guys,
thank you.
I don't have the time, Rick. Mm-hmm. Just how that played out, the African American vote, because I'd be fascinated to see how many will turn around and say, even though these candidates both have the same skin color that I do, they're not my candidates. And I'd like to know, because with Willie Wilson losing and everything that goes into that, both of these candidates, I could see from people who are on Facebook, social media, African Americans live on the south side of Chicago, not sure who to vote for because Lori Lightfoot's role with the Chicago Police Board or Tony Preckwinkle in the establishment.
Or being from the other side of town.
Yeah, and there's really no a candidate that they feel like this is our Harold Washington moment.
Yeah, that I agree. And I think that's true with the younger voters, perhaps in a way that was different than in Harold's time. I mean, and certainly there was a great sense of pride among older African Americans for, you know, electing a black mayor. But there was also a younger, more progressive kind of coalition
momentum
movement there.
Right.
And if you know, you don't, it's kind of interesting is you don't have this opportunity with these candidates to form a coalition.
Mm-hmm.
In many respects.
That's
true. It's a series of fractures is what it is. And frankly, that'll be another story is can they sew it all back together?
That's a good point.
Done?
Reverend Jackson is calling them together for a unity pledge the day after election, regardless of what happens. Both candidates are, one will be, you know, the mayor-elect and the person who does not reign victorious tomorrow night, to come together and do just that for the city. And I think that will be good for all of us. Rick Pearson, we thank you for chilling out with us. We know tomorrow's your big day, so are you going to go sleep right now? What's the plan for you?
I'm going to go dancing at Billy Goat.
Oh,
I'm going to go get Justin's studio ready.
Get it ready over there. Scuff those new floors up.
Exactly.
Thank you, Rick. Let's check in.
Thank you, guys.
See what's coming up top of the hour in the news here on WGN with Kim Gordon.
Anna, the move by Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox's office to drop charges against Empire actor Jussie Smollett brought up protesters on both sides today.
The Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Justin Kaufman is here as we are on the stream today, WGN Radio, on the app, on your smart speaker.
Yeah.
On the CLTV.
CLTV. Good to see the other people on CLTV.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're looking good, Justin. I like how you dressed up for the people. Looks nice.
Thank you.
We want to talk about dueling protests downtown today because you did have the Fraternal Order of Police having a rally against Kim Fox and how her office handled the Jussie Smollett case in particular. But I think there's a little more to it there. And then you had Reverend Jackson and Father Flager also with another rally protesting what seemed to be actions by police, but also in support of Kim Fox and to keep her in her job and to stop the attacks against her. We have Kevin Graham, the Fraternal Order of Police president, joining us now. Kevin, thanks for joining the show.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Tell us what the message is that you folks are trying to get out today to the community about what you see is wrong with what's happening here.
You know, I know a lot of people would like to say, well, it's just about one case, but it's not. One of the things we do here at the Fraternal Order of Police is, yes, we are the union for police officers, but we're all police officers. We want to stick up for the community and for the victims. I think a lot of people don't understand that, you know, when a case comes before a judge and it is not properly adjudicated, whether it's through the court system or the ball is dropped in the prosecutor's office, we have to deal with those victims. And the victims and witnesses are going to be less likely to come forward and help us if they don't think the justice system is working.
Right. Hi, Kevin. Justin Kaufman here. Good to talk with you. All right. So a question I have for you. Kim Fox went on the ride. She did a couple interviews in the last week talking about that this is her relationship with the police department and with the officers is strong. This is just one isolated incident. Do you see it differently?
Oh, we do. And we hear from our detectives and our police officers consistently. You know, we only have to go back a week where the charges were reduced for an individual for a home invasion. He was armed, and then he's back out on the street. And then last week, while that individual was back on the street, he shot and killed an off-duty police officer or was involved in it. And, you know, we want to make sure that people who are a danger to society are going to stay in jail so that people in their neighborhoods are safe. I think we've worked very hard at trying to do that. We're also trying to work hard at building a relationship in the community. You know, it's the FOP that went to the department and said, you know, look, we've got a program that's working down in Atlanta and in Indianapolis about one cop, one church, and pairing them up so that we have a real connection between the community where they live and the police officers who are working there. So, you know, we're working very hard to try and build those relationships and keep people safe. And it's disturbing when our detectives work so hard to try and bring a case to adjudication and the case is dropped.
Well, let me ask you about that exact issue, Kevin, because I'm sure you saw the op-ed piece that Kim Fox wrote in the Chicago Tribune. And in it, one of the things that I think, one of the highlights of what she wrote was when she said, my office believed that securing a conviction in this case was not certain. Now, she had given interviews that said this was a strong case and characterized it as such in the past, but that was what she wrote there. Do you have an idea about what she was talking about why they wouldn't be able to secure a conviction in the Jussie Smollett case?
I mean, actually, no. That's the short answer. I guess the long answer is that you never know whether you're going to get a conviction or not when you go into court. It's, you know, it's always up to a jury or a judge, and certainly that's why we have the verdicts. That's why we have the cases to put on to see what kind of a case you have. I will say this, though. The grand jury did indict him, I can't imagine not getting a conviction from what I've been told on the evidence. So I don't know what she's talking about, but I've been told it's an extremely strong case, and I've asked various individuals, is there something I don't know about this case?
Right. She also said that, you know, she won the election as state's attorney, and she believed that that gave her a mandate, because one of the things she talked about campaigning for the office was that she would not aggressively prosecute nonviolent crimes, class four felonies like this, that, you know, that she puts in this category and says people are never going to be happy. What did you want? Did you want him to be in prison for a long time? And I don't think many of us felt that way. I think in the community, me personally, I didn't like the way it was sealed, and we didn't ever get to figure out what happened. And there was this emergency hearing, and it seemed like a lot of the steps taken here were highly unusual in a case where we deserve transparency. But she's saying it's a nonviolent crime, and this is the way a lot of these things are handled all the time. How do you respond to that?
I've been in law enforcement for 35 years, and I have never seen anything like this before. Certainly, I've seen cases that have been sealed. They've been there to protect juveniles' identities. There has been times that they have court diversions because the individual, whether you call them the offender or the victim in this case, that needs mental treatment. That's not the case in either situation. So, yes, it's unusual. The other thing we found that was unusual was this was one of Mr. Smollett's attorneys, defense attorneys, was also just a few months ago was the special prosecutor that was appointed against three police officers that were acquitted because there wasn't an ounce of evidence. I mean, how much how much tighter can you be with the prosecutor's office than to be selected as the special prosecutor in a high-profile case, and then you're the defense attorney just a few months later, mm-hmm. or a month later?
A lot of questions remain here, Kevin. We do want to say there is a bit of good news from police today, also that there's a five-year low in shootings and robberies, violent crime, burglaries, and motor vehicle thefts are at a 20-year low, and so those are certainly welcome statistics for all of us to hear. We appreciate your time. Kevin Graham, FOP president.
Can I just say one more thing?
Sure.
Please keep in mind the state troopers. They lost two this week, and you know that's hard for families. So please keep them in your prayers.
Thank you for saying that, and we certainly will. Thank you, Kevin. Let's get to the top of the hour news with Kim Gordon. Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, Justin Kaufman sitting in on the stream. We've got Lauren Lapka in studio with us as well. I'd like a little Rick Astley to get you going. Doesn't that help? On a
Brian's
day like
really
today, on a Monday.
Himself.
He's, he's really
enjoying this.
I just love it. He's happy with himself. It was Rick Pearson's kind of walk on music, but now it's sort of the theme for the
he's
show.
He's Rick Rolling the entire show. April Fool's, right?
And we have to ask Tom Skilling if he's a Rick Astley fan. I bet he is.
Oh, I love
it. You guys like to jam in the weather office.
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, we dance here and sing and everything else.
Oh.
And good thing we don't have a camera on it. Here. That's all I can say.
Oh, I think that would be a hit. I totally think that would be a hit. You guys have the weather office stuff going on. I would watch that.
Gosh. We kid. We say it's like, being in Studio 54 around here sometimes. But nothing like a little music to get the, weather brain
What do you guys
shaking.
Lean to over there? There's a wide range? Do you stuff to get you pumped up and kind of dancing? Or do you hit a lot of different genres?
You know, Anna, it's a very eclectic mix.
Yep.
Everything from I don't know, Dolly Parton to, Emerson, Lake and Palmer to Stevie Wonder to the Four Tops. You name it. Just run down the list,
Tom, I saw the documentary on Studio 54 that was on Netflix something like that.
Yeah.
And there's one of the guys, his job was to go out there where the velvet ropes were and pick the people, like, to their face, to say to Kevin, and he'd say, Kevin, you're no good. Lauren, you're in. Anna, you're in. Justin, you're out. So who's at the velvet rope in the weather office? Who do you put out there to make the decision?
We put Bill Snyder out there. Weather producer extraordinary.
Yeah, he takes care of it.
Yeah. Bill passes or rejects anybody who wants to get in the door here.
Yeah. What's the criteria? Like, what does he do? Like, do you have to answer a weather question?
Anybody who put together a sentence.
That's all it takes. Just,
yeah, and read a weather map. That helps.
Can you get us on the list, Tom? You know
what's
over there?
Kevin, you got an open pass.
Oh, great. Thank you, Tom.
No question.
What an honor.
Means a lot.
Hey, I used a weather word to win a round of categories this yesterday, actually, and it was Nordic Front.
There you go.
So
you're in.
I hope I can get in for that.
Wow.
That's a big one.
Anna, you've got
we've got a lot of talent on this staff.
You've got a lifetime pass for that one. That's very, very impressive.
Lauren,
yeah.
What? So that was Lauren saying, Lauren Lapcut.
Oh, that was Lauren.
That was part of, that seems to happen a lot. People think that we sound alike. Because we're both Chicago girls from the neighborhoods. This is what happens, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's a wonderful sound, both of you have. So
thank you, Tom.
That's all right.
We appreciate it. Okay, I wanted to ask you, because the Al Roker, have you ever met the Al Roker?
I have.
I'm sure you guys have.
I've not met him, but I know of him, and we've exchanged little messages through third parties on occasion.
Well, yeah, we love him, too. And, I just noticed he traveled up to the Arctic for this amazing series of reports, only started, but of the effects of climate change. And he's up in that area, I think, that you've talked about before.
You've
certainly been close to it with these amazing weather stations that are up there that are tracking this data. and kind of reminding us of what's happening there and how it's, you know, it's affecting the entire United States.
Oh, it's the canary in the coal mine. Mm-hmm. A wonderful piece on 60 Minutes last night, too, about the Siberian permafrost melting, and the researcher who first pointed to the fact we've got a lot of greenhouse gas trapped in this permafrost that's melting and covers about 25% of the Arctic region of the Northern Hemisphere, and we're releasing huge quantities back into the atmosphere, so there's kind of a feedback going. You know, the planet warms, the permafrost melts, then it releases more CO2 and even more so methane, which is a more important and potent greenhouse gas. Doesn't last as long. Carbon dioxide sticks in the atmosphere, I mean, millennia. But methane breaks down after about 10 or 20 years. So, but it is about 10 times more potent in warming the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And what's happening is, as we melt the ice up there and the permafrost, you've got organic material that's been frozen since the last ice age that suddenly starts decomposing and all when exposed to oxygen and also warmer temperatures. And so literally the lakes in the Arctic are bubbling with methane. If you watch it, you'll see these, and they can actually light these bubbles. Researchers have done that, and it makes for some fascinating and frightening video to see the, you know, these very explosive gases coming into the atmosphere where they warm things up. Yeah, the Arctic is warming 2 to 3 times faster than the mid-latitudes. And you might say, well, you know, why does that matter? Well, a couple of reasons. It melts the ice. We pour about 14,000 tons of water from melting Arctic ice into our oceans every second of every day. And that's 3 times the rate that it was going into the oceans just back in the 1990s, a couple decades ago. And that, of course, impacts sea level. But more than that, it's changing the reflectiveness of the surface up in the Arctic. So when you melt the ice, when you take ice out of the oceans, there's a darker colored surface on which the sun falls. And that means more of that energy is absorbed and it heats. So there's a multiplier effect that goes on there.
Yeah, and you know, when he first got there, he said that the temperature was something like 36 degrees, but that the normal temperature, if you tracked it over the last 20 years, it's something like 25 degrees higher than what you might expect at this time of year.
Well, and we've
had startling things to hear.
It is.
About the unprecedented rise in temperatures in that particular area. Kind of a big red flag.
It is a big red flag. And what it may be doing is buckling the jet stream more frequently. And, you know, there was a war. You get these warm pools to develop. And this is one of the things that took me over the top on climate change. Because as an operational forecaster, I see these warm pools developing with a frequency I don't remember in my 50 years of looking at this. And it was such a warm pool over Greenland that forced Superstorm Sandy into the mid-Atlantic instead of allowing it to go out to sea, which would have been the climatologically favored path. And when you buckle a jet, you get what we saw happen in January and February around here. Namely, this jet stream goes way up into the Arctic. It delivers them unseasonably warm weather in certain areas. And it dislodges the cold air that would otherwise take up residence and sit up there. And brings it down into parts of the mid-latitude latitudes. And that's what we saw this past winter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to try to work that into any conversation. When you buckle a jet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jet buckling.
I don't feel like I say that enough in my daily life.
Absolutely.
That could be a Scattergories thing.
It ought to be in this era of climate change, part of the daily vernacular around here.
You've introduced us to a lot of terms, Tom. I mean, we learn every moment when we listen to you. We do. We have all kinds of new words that we learn.
Darn it, the computer's not working again. That's one of them right there.
hey, Tom, we're still a few days away from this, and I'm sure we're going to ask you for an update every day. But the White Sox home opener's Thursday. How are we looking?
It looks a little windy and cool and rainy, but what would an opening day be in Chicago without that? But I'll tell you something. This weekend has every appearance of being the warmest weekend we've had around here this year. Now, there may be a bit of an easterly component to the south winds that lock in and dominate the weekend on Saturday. That would keep us a little cooler near the shoreline and perhaps impact the the White Sox games here. But on Sunday, the winds may go strong enough subtly that we poke up above 70 for the first time this year. And we were looking. We've only had one 60-degree day so far this year, and typically by now we've had six.
Oh, so we're running. It.
Yeah, we're running way behind normal. First 60 typically occurs on or about March 1st. The first 70 occurs on or about March 30th. And the first 80 has historically occurred on or about April 26th. So we're behind on 60 and 70-degree temp production.
Right.
Here,
what happened this weekend, Tom? That was sort of brutal.
Well, there's your buckle jet stream again.
See? Comes back to that.
Absolutely.
Justin.
If you looked at the upper steering winds, they came right in off the North Pole. And if we had the extent of snowpack up to the north we did only a month ago, it would really have been cold. But it was bad enough because the winds came down from the north, not only above us, but down here at ground level and ran the length of the lake into the city. Yeah. And so that makes for, you know, it's cooler near the lake season around here.
Yeah, I made the mistake of going to the lighter jacket just because I thought that's where we're going. Like,
right.
Right now.
Don't you kind of get stubborn this time of year?
Yes.
Like, no, I'm not wearing the winter coat.
Just,
I don't care how cold it is.
Yeah.
I'm done with
like,
this.
I don't care if winter continues. I'm just not participating anymore. Right. And then you just get cold. I walked the dog in kind of like a light jacket. I was like, that's just how it's going to be. I'm just getting rid of that.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. Dare
putting
Mother
away
nature,
the ugly
right
coat, the ugly boots. I'm not having it anymore. I'm done with it.
I agree with you. I think that's, you know, Bill Schneider does that a lot here. Yeah, Bill hates. I mean, it goes beyond hate. That's not the proper term.
Uh-huh.
He seriously, he loathes cold air as much as Ro does.
Uh-huh.
And so what he does is he comes in here and says, that's it. No warm weather this summer, you know, based on what's going on now. And I said, you're just daring Mother Nature not to warm up, knowing that she probably will, just to show you up.
Uh-huh.
And there's kind of a little bit of a reverse psychology going on.
Sure, yeah. So, play mind games this time of year. We do that with ourselves. Didn't he just get back from Arizona or
something, though,
Tom? So that helps.
Yeah.
Helps you get through. Like Kevin and Roe and Cochran all went to Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
Helps get you through the winter when you get a little trip in you
it
like
does.
That.
I always check with him and see if he had any rattlesnake or scorpion bites, you know. You know, they tell you down there to turn your shoes upside down because sometimes scorpions will climb in them, and they even tell you to check your bed sometimes.
Oh.
Because how would you like those little things crawling around?
There are some benefits to this real hard frost that we get, aren't there?
Yeah.
Just a few.
That's
no scorpions
exactly
up here.
No scorpions. Got that going for us.
No scorpions.
Chicago weather, no scorpions.
I worked a year in Jacksonville, Florida, and I'll tell you, between alligators crawling out of lagoons there into parking lots for apartment complexes, and these little things that you'd see shooting across your floors at night when you turn the light off. I had a little dog, and the first day I brought him home, he was sitting on the bed, and his ears went up when I turned off the light, and I said, all right, plumber, we're going to bed now. And I could see through the darkness, the ears go up, and I thought, what's he listening to?
Right.
And I turned on the lights, and there's these black streaks going toward the corners and all. I thought, what were those?
Geez.
And they call them, stink bugs?
I do too.
Yeah. And you know what the...
As advertised, right?
What they said, and what they said down there was that these things tend to lay their eggs in, like, grocery bags that you keep, you know, for garbage in your closet after you bring the groceries home.
Uh-huh.
And that they hatch in there. I don't know if that's true or not, but that was the common wisdom down there.
Well, the only way to win, the only way to get rid of the stink bugs, you got to buckle a jet.
And freeze them, right?
Justin's going to work that into every conversation throughout the afternoon. So be careful. It's
you've won yourself entree, lifetime entree into the winter.
You'll have plenty of opportunities to work that into your election coverage tomorrow night. Just somehow, some way, I can hear that in your broadcast.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would work.
Yeah. Election day, too. We should ask about that, because weather is always a factor, too. Tom, do we cover that?
It'll be pretty good. 54 tomorrow. There might be a brief shower at some point, but the majority of hours will be rain-free, and it should be a nice election day.
Mm-hmm.
54 is reasonable for this time of the year.
No excuses not to get
that's what I was
that's right.
To
say.
If it's a little shower, that's enough for people to be like, I was going to that 15 minutes is when I was going to go.
Mm-hmm. Like,
but the way it looks now, that wouldn't come in onto the scene until up in the northern suburbs where they're not voting. We're voting here in the city, but they might have a shower hour late morning. And we would probably, if we're going to see one here, it'd be some point in the afternoon. Right. So much of the day will have been dry.
No excuses, right?
Yeah, no excuses.
Tom, can you stick around for just a minute? We're going to break, find out what's going to happen at the bottom of the hour for the news. Do you have a few more minutes
sure.
with us?
Okay. I sure do.
We always appreciate your time, and right. we know that we are lucky to have it. So just hang on here 1 second. Let's check in with Kim Gordon, find out what's happening bottom of the hour in the WGN News.
More inspectors may be heading south to handle what the Trump administration says is a surge of immigrants at the border with Mexico.
Admit it, Tom, you're dancing in the weather office.
I am.
This is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantzis. We've got Justin Kaufman in the studio, Lauren Lapka's in the studio. Kevin Powell is here, Kay Powell with us, as well as Tom Friggin Skilling. And Tom, I mean, if Ro is off today, but you know, he would love sort of the long term look at what you're describing for us, because you did say the word 70 in your forecast, and that just sounds darn good this time
of year. It does. You know, we haven't had something like that since back in October. So this would be the warmest weather in 6 months. It would also be a weekend that's more than 20 degrees warmer than this past weekend, which would be no disappointment.
No.
So, yeah.
No, we're ready for that, for sure. Are.
I'm sick of wearing my gloves. I'm really sick of wearing
Can we put all that away, please? Now, when is the date when you can tell us, Tom, that we can officially put away the big ugly boots, the big puffy coat, the gloves, the big hat, all that stuff? Is there a hard date that you would give us on that?
You know what? Difficult to say, because it depends on where you sit relative to the lake. You know, the lake warms up finally by mid-June. I mean, that's the point where the lake breezes aren't really uncomfortable. Till then, you can get a cool day off, you know, just by virtue of the fact the wind is coming off the water. Now, that seems like a while, but on the other hand, the temperature, we're going to pick up another 77 minutes of daylight in April. The normal temperatures will be on the upswing all month, and what we'll see is, you know, 70s and 80s will become more frequent visitors. They won't be permanent. I've got one of my colleagues running a stat. I want to find out what date beyond which we have historically gotten 80% of our highs to go above 60 and 70.
That's a great stat.
It is a great stat, and it's coming here. I don't have it just yet.
Okay, tomorrow will you tell us?
Yeah.
On that time?
Will indeed.
The problem with the 70s and the 80s is this next month or so is that you want to go to the beach, you want to do all those things, and the water is so darn cold, and you don't go near it. I mean, it's not nice to have the air quality.
Mine's different. It's so hot out, I'm going to go inside.
It's too warm. What is going on?
Hey, Tom, I have a question just about the long-term forecast.
And
right around this time, it feels like we'll start to see the newspaper articles about forecasting what a summer will be, and usually it's in generic terms, like it's going to be a hot summer, it's going to be a mild summer. When do we start to know at least what we think the summer might be like?
Well, you know, we have clues. The winter, and this will surprise you, was actually a statistical wash. It seemed cold because we had cold in late January and February. But the winter as a whole was only about a few tenths of a degree, 2/10 of a degree above normal. And in terms of snowfall, the December through February period, the period we call winter in meteorology, was only 1/2 inch snowier than average. The full season is up about 5 inches over what we've seen. But typically, if you have a warm winter, often the seasons that follow are kind of like that, too. We found, for instance, hot summers. Everybody here thinks, well, that means we're going to have a cold winter. And it's not true. 60% of the winters that follow hot summers are themselves warmer than average. So I would, you know, at this point, all the model guidance has suggested an above normal summer temperature-wise around here. A little harder to pinpoint the precipitation, because a lot of that depends on how much soil moisture we end up getting through the spring season. It's been pretty wet up till now. So that would suggest, you know, you typically run a little shy on moisture about July, just because you lose about 1 1/4 inches every week to evaporation, and you got to get that much rain every week to, you know, stay at equilibrium. But so there's a period in July where you kind of dry out fast because of the strong sunlight and the evaporation. It gets ahead of the rainfall that we get. And then August is historically a wet month around here, more often than not, because the upper winds start lightening up and the weather systems slow down, and they've had the whole summer to build up a lot of moisture in a hot air mass. So you know, I would lean toward above normal temperatures for the summer right now.
Good. We like the way that sounds.
Yeah.
Now, you guys have the baseball on and maybe some other things. So you guys, some of your new shows are blocked out today.
Yeah, exactly. That's why...
You have a little more time for us today.
Talk to you, exactly. Mm-hmm. I get going on graphics here, and I start at home around 8:30, pulling down guidance and blogging and pulling down pictures from from TV side viewers. And
I thought you have people for that, Tom. That's all you?
No, that's kind of my responsibility.
Yeah.
So I pull that down, I get the list together, and submit it to our graphics people here, and then they put it in the system so we can put it on the air. And then I pull down all the models. Guidance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get, you look these days not at just one, you look at a whole group of them, and you produce what's called a blend, you know, blended forecast, which by any measure is more accurate than the prediction of any one given model. So, you know, that's
a lot of work to do it right. That's true.
Yeah, there's it keeps you busy.
Uh-huh.
Folks think you're sitting back with your feet up.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, there's never been a more fascinating time in meteorology because we have a look at this atmosphere unlike anything we've ever had before. So,
as we start out talking about, I've been watching Al Roker's reports this week, and we'll continue to follow those, and I want to ask you about them, too, because it's interesting how he's highlighting some of the technology that is bringing us this weather data that perhaps wasn't available, you know, even a decade ago.
Oh, no question. We can literally measure the ice loss in every glacier on the planet. There's a satellite known as the GRACE satellite that is a gravity, it's a gravity-run satellite. It can measure through subtle shifts in gravity how much ice is below you. And so we've been able to quantify with great specificity how much ice is actually being lost. And we lose about 666 billion tons of ice in the Arctic regions every year. Alaska alone has lost 324 billion tons of ice since 1994. They lost a trillion tons of ice in Greenland from just 2011 to 2014. And to give you an idea how much water is involved in that, that trillion tons of ice would flood the entire U.S. interstate system to a uniform depth of 63 feet, 58 times over. And the water that we're putting in the atmosphere, I'm sorry, from melting ice, putting into the oceans, would be the equivalent, if you looked at just the last 5 years, it'd be something like you could give every human being, man, woman, and child on the planet, about 47 gallons of water a day from the water that's melting in our glaciers right now and going into the oceans. It's interesting, there are side effects of that. The water coming off Greenland has slowed down the Gulf Stream. So what's happening is the water is piling up along the East Coast, so sea level rise has actually increased there. And also the warmest water on the planet is off the East Coast, off the Maine. And that's affecting, like, the lobster catches and, how much... And the reason is because the warm water is building up there, not being transported out with the speed it used to be when the Gulf Stream was running at its faster rate.
Right. Well, as you pointed out earlier, the canary in the coal mine is what we're seeing when we look at Alaska and what's happening there and tracking what's going on. I know you take to social media and you educate us all the time, so if people want another outlet to learn more from you about the science behind what's actually happening and why we should care about it, it's a great place to go.
And I'll just add one more thing. You know, northern Alaska will finish this year nearly 20 to 23 degrees above normal. That's the most above normal that any month anywhere in the United States has ever been. It's practically equals that. So while we've been cold at times down here, that warming up there is what sent the cold air down in parts of the lower 48 in some respects by buckling the jet stream. There's that buckled jet again.
There it is.
See?
So there you go.
Close out on the right note. Well, go back to Dancing in the Weather Center. We'll look for you tonight, Tom. And
I think I've heard enough Rick Astley to,
Sure? Are you sure you've heard enough Rick Astley?
Yeah, maybe we've got to move on to a new one. I like Rick. He does
one
a great
more.
Job.
Why not one more? Gets you going.
There we go.
You can come in.
Bill Snyder, I can hear you.
I know.
He's dancing, he's singing, getting going.
First day back from Arizona, and he's a happy guy because you played Rick Astley.
See? You're welcome. Thank you, Tom.
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you.
Love talking to you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Right back at you, Anna. Mm-hmm. See ya. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye, guys. Well, bye to you, Tom. Let's check in with Kim Gordon now and check in and get the news here on WGN.
Don't say goodbye, girl. Goodbye, girl. Goodbye, girl.
love you too, Rick Astley. This is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. We've got Justin Kaufman in today.
Yay!
Kevin Powell, Kate Powell in studio, and Lauren Lapka is here as well. And Ro Khan's taking the day off. He'll be back.
Do you call him Kate Powell?
Kate, you don't know his radio name?
He's Ro coined me the Kate Powell is my DJ name, so he'll refer to me as Kate Powell.
Yeah, got it, Kate Powell.
Doesn't that sound impressive to you? Like, you met him out and stuff?
Very impressive.
That's how I introduce myself.
Yeah. Kate Powell!
Hi, I'm Kate Powell. You may hear me on WGN in the afternoon. And they say, who?
Yeah, but it kind of sounds good, doesn't it?
This is my friend Kate Powell.
This is Kate Powell. He's really into the whole radio thing. You just got to deal with it. He gets really into it.
We got to get Lauren an official DJ name, too. She's got a Lauren Lapka.
Yeah, I have one of those last names that usually everyone just calls me Lapka.
They do.
And then I have a lot of random nicknames. So I've got like L Squared, obviously, who doesn't have that. Sure. And then Napkin is one.
Napkin.
Don't ask me why, because I really don't know.
Napkin.
Yeah, strange. And Pancake.
We're going to get better than that. We're going to find something good. But we'll work on that. But first, I want to ask you guys about this story. I know it started such a conversation. It's the Joe Biden story. Is he creepy Uncle Joe? Is this all entirely creepy? Or is this kind of harmless? And is he just of a different time and era? You've got another case coming forward. So you had the situation with Lucy Flores, the Nevada assemblywoman. That broke kind of over the weekend. And she wrote an op-ed piece talking about how, well, it didn't rise to a level of sexual harassment. It wasn't a sexual thing, not a crime, but I felt so uncomfortable and it was so inappropriate. And I finally feel comfortable enough, even though this was 5 years ago, to really talk about it. Just to recap, hers was at a rally. She was running for lieutenant governor. Biden came up behind her, kind of put his hands. Did you see the picture?
Yeah.
On her shoulders, from behind her, on her shoulders. And then kind of, you know, leaned in real close. She said she felt, the description was really beautiful. She felt the breath on her hair.
Wow.
And then kind of this long lingering kiss on her head. And she said this didn't feel right. It just didn't feel right. And she wanted to call attention to it. Now you have a second woman, as you see sometimes this happens. She just gave an interview to a Connecticut newspaper alleging that Vice President Joe Biden touched her inappropriately, grabbed her by the head. Again, didn't think it was sexual, but put his hand around my neck, pulled me in to rub noses with me.
As one does.
As you do. Yeah. No, you don't.
Justin does that to me in the hallways every day.
If you like it, I guess, okay. I think you have to read the person, and it just doesn't seem as if that's the appropriate behavior, unless they're a family member, maybe, and that's what you do.
I was going to say, I mean, beyond the it seems to me, in both these situations, when you're talking about these acts where you kiss somebody on the top of their head or you rub noses, that's very intimate, and it's very it's only for family members or loved ones.
It's a small subset of the population you get to do that.
I mean, in 2019, the rule should be like, don't touch anybody, period. Like, ever. I don't look at anybody. I don't touch. I don't even talk to anybody. Right, but this is one of those stories that we've kind of that pop up in the news where. It's everybody always sort of knew what was going on, but until somebody actually comes out and you know, voices their opinion against it in these certain instances, then everyone's like, you know what, this should stop. But for so many years, he's always been the creepy guy comes up behind women and gives them a hug and gives them a kiss. It's weird. I mean, it's...
Well, I think that might be part of it, is people just kind of know Joe Biden is, you know...
Yeah.
He's
harmless. He's a man of a different era. He's a little bit older. This is how they kind of used to do it, but it's 2019.
He's touchy-feely. I don't think that his intentions were bad. No. However, he clearly is not good at reading people to know that they're not comfortable with that. There are definitely a lot of people that don't ever touch them. Like, I don't want you to touch me. Or some people don't mind.
So what would you two women, we have the two women, you guys are the ones that should be answering this. What would you guys do if not even a Joe Biden, but let's say like a prominent public figure, somebody who had kind of been well known for this, came through the studios here and did these sorts of
things? I think it's particularly hard in these cases because even as this woman who was running for lieutenant governor described, she was on stage at the time.
Yeah.
He was there to like endorse her in this big rally. If she had kind of swatted him away, she would have made bigger news and it would have been a bigger incident. And she would have been, like, interviewed, and she probably didn't want all that attention.
Does it also change it, though, that it was on his... Like, if this was privately in a room, then that would have been...
That's the remarkable thing about it. He's always doing it on stage. Yeah. He's always doing it in public. It's the thing we know about Uncle Joe. It's just sort of... I don't know, Lauren, how would you take it?
Well, here's the thing. If I don't know them, then, don't touch me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's different if you have a friendship or a close relationship with someone, and they do it, then maybe you're kind of more forgiving. But if I don't know the person, it's not cool.
to hear Biden talk about it, he says, "Yeah, I'm a hugger. I'm a charmer." You know,
many years on the campaign trail and in public life, I've offered countless handshakes, hugs, expressions of affection, support, and comfort. Not once did I ever believe I was acting inappropriately. If it's suggested I did, I'll listen respectfully, but it's never my intention.
The question I have, or just the thought on Joe Biden, is that, I mean, he is a politician. And he's a pretty good politician. He has served for a long time, winning elections.
He's having a good
one of those glad handing. They say it, you know, going and you know, kissing babies.
He had a different.
But my point being that he's the kind of guy that uses intimacy to his advantage because he's in a way, and I don't want to put he's a manipulator in the way that he's like hugging you to make you go, he likes me, I should vote for him. So the idea that he crossed the line, I absolutely believe that it's inappropriate to kiss somebody in the head or to rub noses, to do with the crap he's doing. But at the same time, that's how these guys are wired politically, because they want to have this kind of connection with
they
you.
They call it the touch.
Yeah, they shake your hand, right, and then they put their second hand over your hand.
Right.
It's a touch, and it's the warmth.
Right.
He's just an advanced politician.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
He's an advanced politician.
He's very advanced with this, yes.
As millennials, do you guys think that this is sort of a thing that nobody...
Yeah, I think that's the younger, for sure.
You're just sort of like, what the heck?
Haven't these sorts of men been around for like a long time? That's just kind of built into what he is. I'm not dismissing if it... Look, I don't think he should... This is...
Disqualifying.
Yeah. But he should stop. I guess that's the thing. I don't know if he should necessarily be...
No more butterfly kisses or Eskimo kisses, whatever kisses.
I think
let's just stop.
The touching in general is sort of like...
Yeah, as a millennial, like it's like Ro and I joke about the straitjacket thing. I don't want, keep my hands up, don't touch anybody, don't look at anybody weird, because people will be upset in this era, which is fine because of what people like, have done in the past, I think has made this sort of environment...
Yeah, you nailed it.
Happen.
Mm-hmm. The guys before you used the idea of touch or I'm just a hugger to cop feels. And, and to use their power in a way that they're like, I'm going to be all chummy and fun, and I'm going to grab her by the shoulders, I'm going to get her close, because that's what I do, I'm a charmer. And that's ridiculous, and it never got called out, and never for generations.
See, that's the thing, it's just people calling it out now. It's one of those stories that everyone saw unfold in front of you, but everybody kind of thought it was weird, but nobody really did anything about it, and then when you call something out and bring attention to it, maybe he'll stop with the butterfly kisses on public stage.
What's that theory that, if everyone's kind of watching an accident happen, if you see other people not doing something, don't. Yeah. I can't remember what it's called. I remember learning it in college, but it's just another one of those situations. Everyone's looking around, they're like, well, no one else is saying anything.
Yeah, I guess I can't. I guess it would be inappropriate.
Or I guess it's normal.
If I did, I'll just go talk to my girlfriends after and be like, what was he doing? What was he thinking?
I would just assume that women deal with this every day.
Oh, yeah. I think it's true.
It's not something that is specific to Joe Biden, but I'll bet you there's a lot of
Do you guys still in 2019?
I actually happened to me yesterday, and I don't want to get too specific, but I was in...
What was his name?
No, I don't know his name. I didn't know
What's
the person.
His Twitter handle?
I was just asking a person inside, a business for directions about where to go. And he pulled me in really close and held my arm. And he pulled me up against his body. And he was trying to be polite. He was trying
here,
to be nice.
Left,
there was no sexual intent. I would never think. He was just, this is where you go, okay? And you're going to go down there. You see that exit sign? And he's holding me really close to his body while he's doing it. And it seemed to last forever. And I was so uncomfortable. But I don't give myself any credit because I should have pushed away.
Did he have the heavy cologne?
I should have
said
something because I think he didn't have any malintent. I just wanted to tell him.
Were
look,
you alone?
Look.
Was it just you two?
No, I was with my mom.
Oh.
And I was the two of us went up to ask for directions and he pulled me in and just that's what ensued. And I feel like if you just sort of say, hey, I'm okay. You don't have to hold me.
Get your paws off me, creep.
What do you do? You're in an awkward situation.
Your mom comes over the top of their purse and takes them out.
Yeah, my mom has martial arts training, so watch out.
How often have you been in a situation where a stranger has kissed you on the top of your head?
Never can very happily say I've never encountered that.
It just seems like such a weird
relatives
move,
maybe.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, relatives.
When you're a kid
aside.
And you just don't
strangers.
Want to be kissed, but
strangers. Like
it's still older generations. Like millennials, like this is not going to happen nearly as often.
And cultural though. So, I have a very Polish background in my family and we were kissers.
That affects it.
We kiss all our family members. It's just normal. For me, I'm like one of the ones that do not, and it almost seems weird, but it's not, because for me, I don't want to be kissing everybody all the time.
But so, do you set boundaries for yourself then? Like, do you do something? Because that's the hard part. It puts you in a situation, not so much with family, but a little bit, where you're like, okay, yeah, no, I don't really want to kiss you on the lips.
Right, yeah.
Uncle Joe.
You kind of do the weave, the classic weave over the shoulder instead of
the dodge.
Bob and weave, like your boxer getting ready for the title match.
Here it comes, incoming.
Down,
left,
move,
right,
down, move. Left, right.
Left to the corner.
Okay, can we, on the flip side, did you see the story of Beyonce today? That's hitting the internet. The
from the NAACP Image Awards, right?
Omari Hardwick came up. He's another actor. He came up and he got a hug, but he went for the double kiss on her. And so he kissed on the side, hugged again, kissed probably between the cheek and the mouth. So it was like a very awkward.
But looked like going for the mouth.
It was 10 seconds too long for even if you're friendly. But the point being that, you know, the beehive is up in arms saying that this guy just took advantage of a situation to come up and be act inappropriately to Beyonce. I kind of agree in that sense. I think that story is one that is getting kicked around the internet, but it's another one that, you know, this guy came up and he's like, I'm going to do what I do. And maybe it was cultural. Maybe it was something that he did in his family.
Or felt he knew her even better than she did. But the look on her face told you that it wasn't okay.
A tight hug. So here's how it goes. I'll break it down.
All right.
Show us on the radio.
I think it was Jay-Z. She was next. I forgot who the guy was. He gives the bro hug to him. Mm-hmm. And then he looks over to her, who's kind of disengaged and you know, she wasn't really part of the convo. She's in there. And he steps in, one step in to get a hug. Like, first they kind of wave, like, oh, good to see you. Mm-hmm. Step in, hug, hands around the body. So a much more bear hug kind of thing. Second, beat,
right.
Pulls back.
Excruciatingly long.
Kisses on the cheek, hugs again, kisses between the cheek and the mouth on the other side.
So it's Beyonce.
Yeah, too much.
Too much.
Yeah. You can just tell it's too much. And then on her face, you're just like, she's like, nah.
You give an Ed Farmer a run for his money. Did you say a play-by-play?
That's a hell of a job, Justin. Yeah. We'll call you in from the pen if we need you in an emergency
situation.
You
can cover Biden on the campaign trail. That would be perfect.
So I don't know. I kind of feel I'm with the beehive. There's been a lot of...
I don't touch anybody anymore. I just don't even look at anyone. I don't talk to anybody. It's like too risky these days. His hand grazed my hand. Take him down.
We had somebody on the download once who was a coordinator for theater, because if you're in a theater show and there's going to be intimate moments, dancing, maybe a simulated lovemaking experience, a kiss, there's now rules for the actors so they don't go over the top, because there have been times in local theater, not just here in Chicago, but everywhere, where actors go above and beyond trying to make it real or doing whatever they need to do. And so they now bring in these intimacy trainers that will train you how the proper way to touch somebody in a professional
environment. What's the proper way?
Yeah, what is the proper way? Can you give us play-by-play on that?
Line. Anyway,
she told me that afterwards we're taking pictures, and I said, well, what's the bet? And she said, the hand on the top part of the back, don't go shoulder to shoulder. If you're standing next to somebody and you're going to take a picture, take your hand, and if you have to touch, you put the hand centrally located in the middle of the back, upper back, not lower
really?
Back.
The back? I would never touch a woman's back.
Which, okay, so bringing that up, that's what happens in bars all the time. Yep. Guys pretend they're trying to
move
through.
That's an intimate thing. Like, if you put your hand around somebody's waist,
and unnecessary. What you mean when someone comes over to meet you, or
well,
you're
they're like trying to walk through the crowd and they act like they just need to touch you,
I tripped,
to push you out of the way. You know they're not doing that to guys.
All right, here's some play-by-play. Justin's coming around, as you can see on your radio. He's making me stand up. I tried to have Mike's on.
I'm like this.
Okay, you're
got tripped out already.
You got your arm on Kevin's back, and you pull him in.
This looks like okay. This is Justin with his hand around my shoulder.
But there's a control element to the shoulder.
This seems so much more chill than the lower back. It's like, dude, get your hand off my back.
But here's the weird part. So in Biden's history, he now has several women coming forward to say, no, this was fine.
Oh, yeah.
There was that one picture of Ashton Carter, the then defense secretary, being sworn in, and his wife got another one of these, what looked like a creepy move from crazy Uncle Joe coming up there. But she's like, no, I'm defending him on this. He's being a good friend. And like, so, in other words, he's probably had several situations where, because of his closeness with different political figures, they welcome it, like family, right? Like in your house.
It's an intimacy meter. Mm-hmm. You can't, if he may be intimate or have some sort of intimate moments with the people that he's, that are defending him at this moment. They know him, they're friends, they know. But if you're in a position like he was in Nevada or supposedly here in Connecticut with the second story, these were strangers.
Right.
And so he's taking that intimacy meter and he's going too far with like how he's greeting strangers. That's it. And Kev, did you feel the difference? Did you feel?
Yes. I feel like I need to walk. Like the back move was creepy.
You think the back is creepy?
Yeah.
See, guys, I wonder, you don't feel this, right? You don't get this. I mean, does this happen to you? Does anyone ever come up and make you feel uncomfortable by touching you when they first meet you, like sort of thing?
No,
you don't ever have to.
I've never really felt him.
No.
Sometimes,
when Justin came around and put his hand on my back.
When you get a second meeting with a guy, and you're now at the point where you're beyond just a handshake.
Uh-huh.
That can get awkward, where it's like a handshake, but it's more like a bro shake, and then you go in, and there's half like a secondary hug, half hug.
But that's just awkwardness.
Yeah, that's just awkwardness.
Not feeling like you're violated in some way, or like controlled. You felt violated.
No, but there.
The second hug was kind of comforting. Can you come back over here with me, Justin?
Oh,
I needed a hug today.
Oh, gosh, yeah. You're like his therapy person.
A therapy radio host. To bring you on the plane with
The interesting thing about this is Biden, and when they look at all the polls, you know, he's like, he would beat Donald Trump if the election were held today. He's, you know, head to head, and he's also.
Well, that's the thing. Does this whole story really negatively impact his image all that much? Not really.
Only the people that are really going to be up in arms about this, no matter who it is. You know, right. You wonder if it's a way to sort of, I don't know, bring other people to the forefront on the Democratic side.
206, the texter has, the point on Joe Biden, which is great. All in all, I suppose it's probably good that annoying, creepy people are now being told how annoying and creepy they are.
Yeah. Yes.
But as Anna just said, some people didn't mind it at all.
Yeah, but if I'm in a situation where I'm a hugger, and I come in and I'm at the workplace.
Yeah, you got to read that.
And I'm grabbing Kev and we're having fun. Yeah. And I do the same thing to Lauren, and Lauren's not okay with it because that's just not how she's down. You should be able to tell me that.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, instead of just eating it.
Right.
Like, which women have probably had to do for centuries on centuries of just being like, oh, that caveman,
that's
just the
point.
Way he acts, and I should know better. Yeah. So I feel like this is a good thing overall, and I don't think it's something that's going to end Joe Biden's political career.
No, I mean, I think a lot of people are probably going to brush over this news story.
Well, look at President Trump. I mean, have you ever seen him when he meets, like, the first ladies of other countries, like Bridget Macron, the way he pulled her by her elbow and grabbed her toward his body? That was one of those moves where she couldn't get away, but she was, like, really defiant and just, like, struggled out of the way, like, no, I'm not going to do that. And that was one of those moves.
And again, we can get into the political side of this, but the allegations and the accusations against the current president are much more sinister.
Right.
Than the kind of the things that Joe Biden is being accused
grabbing
of.
Grabbing women in a certain department. I remember, not to drag his name into this story, but John Calipari, who's the head coach at Kentucky, is kind of a really intense guy. And there was a moment where he was headed to the locker room at halftime, and the reporter, a female for ESPN, was interviewing him. And like the next thing you know, he had his hand around her arm, not like too hard, but almost as if he was like firing up one of his players. And she was like, I'm not one of your players.
Did she say that?
She did. She said it on the air. And she handled it professionally, and he kind of pulled back. He's like, it wasn't even. It was a little awkward, but like I think that's a perfect example of how you know, she handled it perfectly, and he didn't mean anything.
No,
except for the fact
he just kind of got lost in the moment.
Except for the fact that that's John Calipari's way of exhibiting power.
Yeah, but he does that with the players.
But that's
in the moment. That's his arena that she's in.
But he's doing it to his players because he's trying to get their attention. Say, I'm the power person.
Kind of.
So when he's doing that to women,
but I don't think in his mind he was like, I'm gonna exert my power over this female reporter. It was more of like, wow, we just ended the first half. That was an intense end of the game, and then next thing you know, he's grabbing your arm, and then everybody sees it on TV, so it's awkward. It's just one of those situations where I just thought the female reporter handled it
very well.
You need to,
because it's not an easy thing.
You do, but be sincere to the fact that they probably don't know. Well, he didn't know that he was kind of doing it.
I love it when John Calipari. He doesn't know. No.
He just doesn't know.
He's a millionaire, billionaire coach. He doesn't know better.
We're going to take a break here. We've got the top five at five you will not believe coming up. We've got more of the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. But first, let's get to the top of the hour news with Kim Gordon. The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Justin Kaufman sitting in with us today. Good to have you here.
Absolute pleasure. Good to see you.
The best. Kevin Powell is here in studio.
We get free hugs from Justin when he's in studio.
Yeah.
This is
appropriate
nice.
Hugs.
Turns out
very appropriate.
He's very appropriate with his hugging. Lauren Lapka is here, and I'm requesting no hugging at the moment. So thank you for being here. Thanks for everyone for being here. But we just finished talking about Joe Biden and that whole situation. It has launched such a debate, I swear. And it's weird because, as we pointed out earlier, it's been going on forever. It's just now getting a lot of attention, I think, because people feel like it's okay. We've got someone here, 815. My doctor used to kiss me goodbye after every visit. I never thought of it as creepy until I was in the hospital for a test, and he kissed me on the forehead, and and the tech said, does he do that every time he sees you? And I said, I hear him do it to everybody in the office. Mm. So this is kind of the...
I just feel that this is just scratching the surface with the way that men take advantage of little intimate moments, and whether that's about power or I don't know what it's about. It's being creepy, but you'll see in the texters too. There's no forgiveness. You can ask for forgiveness if you're Joe Biden to run for president, and I think that there's some question about his statement. His statement was a little bit, if I was doing it wrong, I didn't know. And mm-hmm. you know, I think there should be more of a moment to say, hey, listen, there's a reckoning that, you know, men of my generation need to think more about how mm-hmm. we interact with women. And, you know, I think that that's worth having a conversation. I don't think that it excuses him or penalizes or takes him out of the race for president.
Right.
But it's a good time for us to have a conversation about it. Heidi Stevens had a great point or a great column today in the Balancing Act mm-hmm. in the Tribune sure. about this, saying we got to get past the point of making villains out of these situations mm-hmm. and find a way to
sort of more of a teaching moment.
Yeah, or just recognize that you can still like Joe Biden but not be okay with his
right. Acknowledge
behavior.
Yeah. Acknowledge that people are not going to be comfortable with this, you know, let's kind of maybe change the behavior. We get that you didn't mean any harm. You know, things like that.
Right.
I think that's kind of overall just the goal here is acknowledge the
right.
problem.
No nose to nose.
Right.
Bottom line, don't touch anyone. That's
right.
My policy.
What do you call it?
Anybody?
The full bird box? Is that what you call it? Isn't that what you called it? Or from the, what was that?
Well, I said, just imagine you have a straitjacket on. Just keep your hands to yourself. Don't touch anybody. It's too risky in 2019.
I just think that there's so much in this room. We're going so on and on about Joe Biden, and nobody cares about Beyonce. I feel like Beyonce.
Yeah, poor Beyonce.
I feel like
the beehive should be going nuts right now.
Wrong end of that.
That was just a little too much. I think the difference here is that there were so many moments with Biden, and that that was sort of one awk moment, like very awkward situation.
I don't know, man. Who's Amari Hardwick?
Never heard of him.
dropping two hugs and two kisses on a queen bee.
You don't do that. You know better than that.
First of
all, don't pick one or the other. Why hugs and kisses?
Yeah.
And going back and forth.
Right. Going back in for the second sort of hug kiss. It was like, okay, overkill, just so we know.
Okay, let's get to the top five at five. It is that time of day.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show. Let's go.
3, 2, 1. Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Okay, okay. Checking in at...
Number five.
Demonstrators supporting the Fraternal Order of Police. They crowded together, holding signs, wearing buttons. They were downtown today outside City Hall and calling for Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox to step down for president of the FOP, Kevin Graham. He says that people that commit offenses, well, they should be held accountable.
No matter who you are, no matter who you are in this city and in this county, that people are treated fairly and respectfully. We certainly want to make sure that justice is served in all cases.
That's like the Starbelly Sneetches story, you know, the Dr. Seuss, where you're not sure who's on what side. Like that could, you could say, we should have played a game right there. It's like, who's saying this? And you'd be like, is that the Black Lives Matter people? No, is that the FOP?
It was a confusing confluence of protesters.
We just want fairness. We want equality and justice for all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's, I think, what everybody wants.
Mm-hmm. That's the goal, yeah.
Right?
That's what we're all pushing for.
And I can understand, I guess, why you would have the FOP, an anti-protest, if the idea was that there are other people saying, we've been asking for this for years.
Right, right. Well, the FOP president, for his part, he was on the show with us earlier, Kevin Graham, and he said that, you know, he wants a top-to-bottom review of what happened here, that there should be more transparency. They're obviously not happy with Kim Fox, but they are calling for her resignation. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but we do hear that there may be some sort of review, and you hear a growing number of people asking for that, given the circumstances.
Politically in this town, the only thing you have to remember, everybody wants a piece of this. Everybody has already signed a has allegiances and allies. Rahm Emanuel, The FOP in this case, they're not Kim Fox fans. They haven't been. Kim Fox was brought in. She won on a mandate from Cook County voters because of Laquan McDonald's possible cover-up. There, you know, she came in as a reformer, so you can understand, right, why the police and the FOP don't like Kim Fox beyond Jussie Smollett.
Yeah, no, it's true. There has been a contentious relationship from the start.
From the start, she ran on that platform.
Right. She ran on the platform that she was going to try to look at nonviolent crimes and treat them in a different way, and she felt she had a mandate given the fact that she was elected to do that.
Not to mention keeping police officers accountable and to take on police misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big thing that came out of Anita Alvarez when she was state's attorney.
Well, that
so you can understand why the FOP does not like her. She
just brings us to our next point here, where activist Jamal Green is saying that it's Kim Fox here who is being treated unfairly.
85% of murderers in the city of Chicago are roaming free. And they're not talking about what the detective division and the police department should be doing. Rather, Kim Fox not prosecuting a low-level felony. This is not just an attack on Kim Fox. This is an attack on black elected officials throughout this state.
That's a stretch, but
that's definitely a stretch. I mean, look, Roe's been calling for Kim Fox to resign. I think a lot of people feel that same way. This was handled horribly. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those situations where he can say, oh, well, you should be looking at the police department. People are. You can also look into the state's, the Cook County State's Attorney as well at the same time. You know, it's not an either-or situation.
Right. And you know, the situation is more than just Jussie. I don't think anyone thought he was going to get lengthy prison time for this. I think a lot of people might have thought that an apology, an admission of guilt, as we've seen in many cases like this where there's been a false report of a crime. If you go back over the years and look at what has typically happened to people in this situation, that has happened. Mm-hmm. There's been a community service component and a fine. But there isn't this sort of emergency hearing with this record speed of everything happening. Boom, 2 weeks after, it's out of court, and there's an erasing of the record. There's a sealing of the record. There are records now that don't even exist in the Cook County database about his case because of how quickly it was swept aside. And I think if you want us to restore the faith or keep the faith in the Justice Department that Kim Fox heads up, you want to have transparency in that process. And I think that's what this becomes part of. Show us the transparency. She said in her op-ed piece in the Tribune today, my office believed that securing a conviction was not certain in this case. Okay, but you told the Sun-Times a few days before that it was a strong case and you felt you had it and this wasn't an exoneration. So it feels as if we're getting a lot of conflicting information.
And then Smollett comes out and acts like the victim. I think that's what's driving so many people crazy is that he comes out saying this vindicates me and it's like, no, it doesn't at all.
Well, back to Jamal Green. What Jamal Green says about that this is an attack on African-American politicians or African-American leaders. Just to honor what he's saying, there is a thought, and this goes back to my point I just made about the politics of the situation, that the Tony Preckwinkle, who is the Cook County Board, this is Kim Fox was her former chief of staff, and she came in and beat the machine candidate. My question to the FOP and to Kevin Graham is if there was an FOP-backed candidate who was the state's attorney, and they made this choice. And would they be out in the streets with signs saying, we want that person to resign? And that's my only point. I think there is outrage here, and I think there's important to ask. But I think that the tools, the things that people are doing in response to this are political. And to go and ask for her resignation at city council and have a FOP signs, that's just about politics. That's what Jamal Green's talking about. Take away the race component and consider it to be just identity genre politics in Chicago. Yes, a primarily white vote wants the state's attorney's office back. That's what they want. And so Kim Fox is against that. So the only problem I have is I think it's theatrics at the end of the day.
Isn't it always on both sides?
Yeah,
whether it's Black Lives Matter or the FOP or whoever else is protesting.
Yeah,
isn't it always?
Most of the time, it's protests coming for people out of power. So the FOP is in power. The police department is in power. So the idea that they're going after a state's attorney for letting a celebrity go on a hate crime or a hoaxed hate crime, seems to be a little, a lot of theatrics over something that really doesn't have anything
to do
with
it. After all the work and time they put into it, to have them just completely dismiss the work of police department,
again,
why wouldn't they be upset?
I will say this, and I've said this before on this radio station. You were talking about a lie that went into a lie that went into a lie that went into a lie. The outrage is going to have to be backtracked when the next piece of evidence comes out. So all I'm
saying, what is the FOP supposed to do? Sit back and say, you know what? It's just a bunch of lies. No big deal.
The FOP should probably go and say, hey, we have an issue, and they've done that. We said, listen, we want to see the sealed documents. We want to know why you dropped this case. The idea of taking police officers and going down to protest in front of the office, that's politics. That's just, let's get her out so we can get our guy in.
Let's hear from Michael Flager, shall we? He was out at that protest also. He was at the competing protest that was organized by Flager and the Reverend Jesse Jackson. And he says that this, to your point, Justin Kaufman, is a political attack, nothing more.
The attack on Kim Fox is not about Jussie Smollett. Let's get it straight. That's a front. Yeah. Rather, it's about trying to remove a person who is a threat to the old boys' system of power in this city and in this state.
Old boys' system of power, which was basically mirrored by what happened here.
Well, let me also say that, you know, there is, the FOP has a vested interest in the municipal election, which is up tomorrow. Their candidate, preferred candidate, is Lori Lightfoot. It's not a stretch to say that this is bad headlines for the Cook County Board president, whose former chief of staff is a state's attorney. So there's a lot of politics trying to grab headlines the day before a municipal election. Why not do this on Wednesday so you're not in the election, you know, the jet stream? Not to get back to buckle the jet. Yeah, right. But my point is, I think I understand where Flager's coming. I'm not saying he's accurate, that he's right.
I would agree.
But the idea that there's politics to this, yeah, this seems to be a lot about like the politics of outrage.
Right.
And I feel like all of us in the outrage that you're talking about, and I know that can sense and I can feel, they're using that. They're not. I can feel it in the room.
Like I'm in therapy all of a sudden.
I would agree with him that it's not. It's
let
not
me give
about
you another hug.
It. Don't get sucked in by the politics of this.
I would agree that it's not all about just Jussie. I think it is though about faith in our systems, and I think that she represents that office, and we need to have faith that what was done for a reason. And I think on its face right now, to any citizen, take the FOP out of it, to any citizen looking at the facts of this case, it doesn't seem to add up. And I think that's where we do need answers.
Okay, so I'll throw one out for you. What happens? Is the FOP front and center when Ed Burke beats his case? When Alderman Ed Burke beats his corruption case and that it gets thrown out by the state's attorney?
It is politics.
But what I'm saying is the FOP going to be up there saying, what about equality and justice for all? That's just the question that I think is being asked by some of the protesters.
It's a little bit different with Ed Burke.
All right.
So here we go.
Let's move on, shall we? Checking in at
number four.
It's been more than a year since Jay Cutler played in the NFL.
Cutler,
and although he made millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars in the league, probably more than he's worth, he realized he can't keep spending his retirement just puttering around his Nashville area farm. I mean, that's not enough to keep a guy busy. So that was the compelling subject matter on last night's episode of Very Cavallari.
Hey.
Just in time.
I need a hand.
Nah, I'm good. Hi, Bill.
What do you mean?
Well, you're just picking up all the sticks?
Yeah.
Why?
Whenever it starts getting warm out and the grass starts growing, I'm gonna have to cut the grass.
So you're just gonna pick up sticks all day?
Well, someone has to.
Well, I guess.
Listen, you have no idea how much stuff I do around here on a daily basis.
I think I have a good idea.
Like, you monitor things? I don't understand.
I can tell anytime one little thing has been moved or touched or...
I feel like Rain Man around here.
What do you do with that? I mean, a reminder, he is from Santa Claus, Indiana, and she's originally from Barrington. Yeah. I mean, I know she went to L.A. and got her affected accent and everything, but, I mean, what is going on here? People are watching this show, though, and they seem to love Jay.
I love Jay Cutler.
Just walking around doing nothing.
I love Jay Cutler on E! I don't like him on the football field.
It's something to see Cuddy on the E! Network. Because like, we've talked about this before, where there's a whole demo that didn't even realize that channel existed, and now they're tuning in on Sunday nights to see Jay Cutler be
a fake.
Do
you have friends who are checking in?
I mean, people tweet about her, send you messages, like, you see what he said today? You know, it's just Cuddy being like a fake farmer hipster situation.
I wish we had that
impressive.
As a quarterback.
If you can get people to tune in to watch him and get through the screeching voices of some of the females on that show.
It's the secondary. That's my problem with that show, because Mary on the morning show, she loved on Cochran, she loved Very Cavallari, and she would talk about it. And I was always like, I tried to watch it, but the secondary lines, like the storylines that don't involve Jay Cutler, I'm lost.
I normally watch the highlight reel of Cutler, like the morning after, because people just edit together the Cutler scenes.
Yeah, that's
well, there you go. And all the women on the show have that weird uptick at the end.
We're gonna talk
where are you going?
This?
Yeah, I'm going to go to the store.
That's how they talk.
I just don't... dating life is... I don't know. I'm just so exasperated all the time.
Part of the appeal of the show. We have a bonus cut, actually, so let's see if we hear a little bit of that accent in there.
Isn't it crazy that it's been a year since your last football game?
It's going really fast.
I know. Are you sad at all?
You know, I enjoyed, like, hearing the kids, hanging out with you. Like, it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like I need to start trying to figure it out. Something out. Just can't keep picking six up.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, probably still pick six up, but I can pick the sticks up and then go do something.
Well, it's kind of nice for me to hear that you're ready to do something.
You don't like me at home all the time? Like, whenever you come home, I'm here. Whenever you leave, I'm here.
You're just always here.
That's not your ideal situation?
I just think it gets to a point where, at some point, I would get old.
Whoa.
It could happen tomorrow. I don't know.
I mean, I'm not going to hold my breath, but...
Is this supposed to be motivational?
I think I'm just a realist.
Yeah. Why did you marry him? Do you sense a little bit of something going on there between the Cavaliers or the Cutlers?
I think they figured out that people are watching for Jay Cutler and whether or not he's going to talk about football. So they set that piece up. Her first question is like, so do you miss football? What kind of question is that?
People want more of Jay.
They want more of Jay.
And the E! Network's going to give it to us.
She's got a new dating show out, too, because last episode of Very Cavalier, he was playing a dating coach to one of her friends. And trying to hook her up with someone suitable.
I want a Jay Cutler dating show.
Wouldn't you love that?
That would be amazing.
Yeah. Where he's just sort of not really interested.
Yeah.
Is that his appeal, that he just is not interested in anything? He just sort of chills?
That's the vibe I get. He just doesn't care about life as a whole.
I love it.
Good for Cuddy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He'd be a great backup quarterback to come back and come out of retirement for like the Rams, like an LA team with an LA fan base. Where they're like, our celebrity real, you know, our real, what do you call it? What do you call that? Reality TV. Reality TV star. Yay.
You hear that reality TV star is going to play football?
Yeah, you'd love it. Everyone would love it.
All the people
there.
That have no idea.
Kardashians would be up in the front row.
Oh, gosh.
I wonder, will he ever play football again? Is that out of the picture,
do we think?
He shouldn't.
Yeah, will he be in the broadcast booth, do we think?
I don't know. Remember he was supposed to, and then he went back to the Dolphins, and then the broadcast thing kind of flaked out. Look, if he wants to, that's opportunities there.
Yeah.
Somebody
I don't think he wants
on.
To work. At all.
Done some.
He likes to pick up sticks, is what we learned, and he likes to have his farm.
He's basically a dog.
He is. All right, we have high hopes for them. We hope everything works out well for them. Let's check in here at...
Number 3.
Pixar has made a ton of iconic films over the years, and The Incredibles is among the very best. It made hundreds of millions of dollars in the box office. It scooped up a pretty fair share of awards and critical acclaim, and it inspired... Guess what? Kanye West to finally give his first Keeping Up with the Kardashians interview.
This is my first time doing this. I'm not actually attempting to do good. I just, like, part of the reason why I even thought about or considered doing this recording, like, what do you call it, this interview? This interview is because of the movie The Incredibles. It starts off with the interviews. The superheroes are giving interviews. The wife got a big butt, and I just see our life becoming more and more and more like The Incredibles until we can finally fly.
He really is crazy. That's what's going on in Kanye's brain, in case we were wondering. Kim and Kanye sat down with Rhymefest. We know him. He's a Chicagoan. We've talked with him many times. And he was at Kardashian's Los Angeles area office to try to heal. Remember, she kind of got on Twitter. She went after him. She said, you're just eating off Kanye, and you're just like, that's who you are. And she was all in his face about he was not doing right by her husband. So she wanted to, they wanted to have a healing moment after their Twitter feud. And Rhymefest decided that he was game for that. And the lack of involvement in Donda's house was the issue, remember?
He tweeted out, Rhymefest started it, he tweeted out that Kanye does nothing for the charity on the South Side that he helped start. And this was back in whenever this happened, a year ago or whatever. And then it was Kim Kardashian who responded saying, how dare you, you know, because Kanye wasn't going to do that. And she made a huge story because when she tweets... Everybody listens.
The world stops.
Not as much Rhymefest. Rhymefest put that out, and everyone's like, all right, whatever. But when she did it, then it became, you know, every single story on it. So this was, now you find out that it's really just a setup for the show. as everything is.
Right, that's true. And, you know, it's interesting. Let's hear the clip, and I want to tell you a story, because we had Rhymefest in studio last week, and he addressed this very thing to us personally. But the youth mentorship, Donda's House, here in Chicago, was at the center of that Twitter war.
So, from my perspective, I grew up with all the same friends being my same best friends from when I was in preschool. Not one of my friends has ever spoken out about me. He can't really say no to people if they ask him financial questions, if they ask him for any kind of help. And sometimes I think it's like to a fault where he'll hurt himself and then he won't have something financially and he's struggling.
I want to make it clear. No, it wasn't about money. It's deeper than that because we're friends.
Okay.
They are friends. They go way back. You know, Che Rhymefest wrote Jesus Walks.
Right. They won Grammys together. So it's interesting. But when we had Rhymefest in studio, what was it, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago now, he talked about this. And he said, well, you know, we're going to solve this problem because I met with Kanye for lunch and we were meeting on the side and that it started to be too secretive. And then Kanye said to me, well, you gotta make it right with my wife. And so he told us, well, I called her. And immediately the response was, no, don't do this here. We're going to do it on the show. So right away, transfer the apology or whatever it was to the show. And that's where it happened. By the way, we do have that Rhymefest and Emilio Estevez interview. We all sat down, me, Richard Roper, and Rokan. And we're going to be airing that tomorrow.
That's
here
awesome.
On WGN.
Yeah, that's the new movie that's coming out.
But we have a bonus cut. So let's just hear a little more of this little spat with the Rhymefest and Kardashians.
Kanye wanted me to help work on the album. And I said, yeah, I'll help work. And he said, well, what do you want? And it wasn't about money. It was like, yo, I want you to tweet out what we're doing about Donda's House. And I kept telling you, Kanye, I need you to do this. Come on, we got to do that, do this. Kanye is from a village. And the village was feeling like our dear brother. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Turned his back on the village.
Mm. Strong words. He felt like he turned his back, but Kim was not having that at all.
And I give Kim Kardashian credit. I like that she went after Rhymefest because he was throwing shade on social media to her husband.
All right, here's
some
more.
And I'm friends with Chad. I'm friends with Chad.
Let's see if this will turn you here, Justin.
And so I struck out because me and you are talking
about
peace.
You can't make positive by doing negative. You could have said, "Hey, can I call you? I want to just talk to you directly before I say something." You know.
I just think if Kanye said, like, I can't deal with Donda's House right now, to me that means in all capacities.
Yeah, but that was after he said he would.
Okay.
But even if I said I would,
you know what I mean?
That's what I didn't know.
I was going through some.
Yeah, but it was all negative.
Yeah, the I was going, that's why it's called going through some. Because it's negative. What you talking about?
It's all better now, though. Because if you do it on a reality show, then it repairs the relationship. If you just handled it on the side, on the phone, it wouldn't have had the same effect. I get that sense somehow, don't you? All right, we'll have your two and your one. But first, we're going to break for the news with WGN News at the bottom of the hour with Kim Gordon. It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. We've got Justin Kaufman sitting in as Ro is taking a day off. Kevin Powell, K-Pow, is in the studio, along with Lauren Lapka. And we are sort of in the middle here of the top five at five. We got through your five, your four, your three. So, Ron.
Number two.
Thanks, Orion. Weeks after the Securities and Exchange Commission asked for him to be held in contempt for violating his company's settlement with the SEC, Elon Musk has released a surprise rap single about the 17-year-old, 440-pound gorilla known as Harambe. The Tesla CEO took to Twitter over the weekend, unveiling a SoundCloud link to the new song titled Rest in Peace, Harambe.
R.I.P. Harambe, sipping on some bomb, baby.
Oh dear, that's really his voice. So Zoo and You rhyme. Did you notice that? He's got some really good rhymes in there. Well, this is the thing. A lot of people are saying, like, he should sit out April Fool's because last year on this day, he said an important announcement's coming up, and he said the company's going bankrupt, and it's going to be chapter 14 and a half. And
is this,
like,
is this an April Fool's joke? Did he do it as an April Fool's joke? He didn't?
But he's there. I'm reading a no from our producers. No, what? This was not even an April
Seems
Fool's
like an
joke.
April Fool's joke.
It totally
he's
does.
He's just a weird guy.
Isn't he? He's like brilliant, weird, but sometimes this stuff comes out and is like, I don't think you need to do this. This is not what you need to be doing. Just build our little tunnel to O'Hare. That's what we need. Get to O'Hare faster.
Yeah.
Checking in at...
Number one.
Did you see this? Comedian Chris Rock. Well, he ripped into Jussie Smollett at the NAACP Image Awards with a series of jokes over the weekend. Where the actor was nominated for his role on the Fox series Empire.
I guess I got to present an award that said no Jussie Smollett jokes. Yeah, I know. What a waste of light skin, you know? You know what I could do with that light skin? That curly hair, my career would be out of here. Running Hollywood. Yes, no, just... What the hell was he thinking? From now on, I ain't never gonna know just you're Jussie from now on. You don't even get the you no more. That you was respect. You ain't getting no respect from me.
Supposedly it's true. They weren't supposed to joke about the Jussie Smollett. We're supposed to bring him up. He didn't show. He's a no-show at the...
No, but
it was funny because TMZ reported that he touched down in L.A. He didn't speak to cameras or reporters or anything. But they said, well, he's there for the Image Awards. Yeah. So it was everyone expected that he would be there. And they were going to protect him. The Image Awards. You can't make this up.
I'm glad. Chris Rock is just a... He's just a national treasure in the way that people tell him broadcasters don't talk about Jussie Smollett, but he comes through with those jokes and knocks it out of the park. And it should be more scathing for Jussie Smollett. That should be, he's not going to go to jail. At least he gets a 45-minute Chris Rock routine.
Mm-hmm. Get critiqued by some of the best.
By some of the best.
Perfect from Chris Rock.
Yeah.
Expect nothing less from him.
No, that's true. He rises to the occasion every time. We have a bonus cut here, maybe from SNL.
Jussie Smollett was a victim.
Oh, please.
Mr. Daniels, I have represented Jussie his entire career. I am sure there is a very reasonable explanation for why he's so late right now.
Well, I just hope it's not some crazy excuse.
I'm so sorry I'm late.
Jussie?
Oh my God, are you okay?
Guys, you are not gonna believe what just happened to me.
Not again.
Really?
I know what you're thinking, but it's not that.
Okay, so what is it?
I got attacked again.
That's exactly what we were thinking.
Oh, okay, good. So you believe me?
No!
What is wrong with you, man?
I just told you I was attacked.
He meant... Mentally, Jussie. Mr. Daniels, can I have a word with my client for a second?
Yeah, I think you should.
Jussie.
Don't worry, I got some hits in too. I'm still the gay Tupac.
Nobody knows what that means.
That's funny.
It is. It was funny. I mean, you wonder, wasn't he written out of the last two episodes of Empire? And now that this has happened,
what happens to him now in Hollywood?
That's true. What happens? Do you take him? Yeah. I mean, does
I mean, he's a joke at this point. Mm-hmm. Who's going to take him seriously?
But you do see some in Hollywood, and you saw his Empire cast members for sure, but even people at the NAACP Awards saying, you know, I support Jussie, I'm with him. We'll never know what happened. Those people are kind of rallying around the fact that this is sealed, and we won't know. But I think here in Chicago, we're close enough to it to know, I believe, that there are enough questions there that we need to kind of know. We need to know to have the faith in the office of the state's attorney that this was handled appropriately.
There's a difference, and it's funny, because in that SNL sketch, they didn't really get into the Kim Fox attorney dropping the charges. That was just overall, like, they had come off a break and they didn't get a chance to talk about Jussie Smollett or do a sketch about him. So I wondered nationally how much the outrage, like there isn't as much outrage about the dropping of the charges and maybe the state's attorney getting, you know, paying favors or something like that. And this is just more about Jesse Smollett and him lying about being attacked.
But that's just it, to Kevin's point. It's like, how is his word trusted now? I mean, how does he just sort of show up and does this just get swept away in like Hollywood style where he shows up and suddenly everything's okay now? Do we just... You know, did he just goes back on like junkets and he shows up in interviews? He'll always be asked about this. At the very least, it'll always be an asterisk next to his name. But you think it might be more than that. You wonder the effect it will have on his career.
If he lied about what happened, and he did exactly what the Chicago police and the grand jury said he did, he doesn't have a place in my television set
I don't think most people would hire him.
Yeah, I think there's still a question, and I think that the reason that the people is that he denies that he lied.
Right, he keeps lying on top of lies on top of lies.
Unless he's not. That's my. Right. I'm not trying to say that. I believe of what he's doing, but
obviously
there's a question of whether or not, you know, when you say an asterisk next to his name, and I don't know. At a certain point, the question will be: I want to see all the evidence. I want them to unseal everything so I know exactly what the truth was before. And I think a lot of the people that support Jussie Smollett are probably saying the same thing. Like, I want
to
know.
But do you
exactly
need to see all of it in order to have some suspicions about what your friend did here?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think that there is enough there to say, at the very least, he certainly used up police resources and cost the city a number of dollars. If you believe every single authority, including the state's attorney's office, they say this was a fake hoax. That's what everyone's saying of any authority. And so you wonder, is this lawsuit with the city going to go anywhere? This trying to recoup the $130,000 that was spent on police overtime and resources? Is this a state legislature who's proposing this bill to say, we don't want your, you know, anything, any cast that he's part of, we don't want your production to get tax credits here in the state
that's
of
ridiculous.
Illinois? You think that's
ridiculous.
Going
you can't
too far?
Do that. You can't do that. You can't have a law on the books that says if you employ a specific person, we will not give you the tax credits promised. You just can't, because if you want to get there, then you start going into all sorts of different things in different ways. Well, why not other people? Why not Harvey Weinstein?
Right.
Why not?
I think Harvey Weinstein isn't really going to be working very much.
But I think it just comes to a civil liberties issue of like you can't legally say we're going to take away money from your project if you hire this person. That's outrage. That to me is misplaced.
But you think that I get the sense from you, Justin, that you're satisfied with the way
I'm not
it was
satisfied.
That there was no apology. There's no sort of mea culpa. That this was sort of sealed, expunged, community service, time served, special
outrage.
Treatment. Okay, because he's a celebrity, it just all goes away, and we're supposed to accept it.
No. I understand all of the things about Jussie Smollett in the case, and you can hear me talk about how upset I was about the way that Chicago got dragged through the mud on this, and if he is lying, and this is exactly how it played out, good riddance. He should be in the system. I'm not happy that they dropped the charges off of what looks like, to the naked eye, some sort of special.
Not just naked eye, a grand jury returned 16 felony indictments.
I'm saying the naked eye, it looks like somebody did special treatment to this dude to call in a favor from the state's attorney's office to make that go away. All that stuff makes me mad. I'm just not sure the aftermath of everything that's happening, and whether it's a knee-jerk lawmaker saying we're not going to give credits to this one individual, whether it's the FOP protesting that the state's attorney has to resign. All these political theatrics that are happening after the fact, yeah, I don't care about that. I feel like that's trying to manipulate my outrage.
Do you think there should be a review of her office, though, the way it was handled at the state's attorney's office, the sort of fake recusal? I just meant that colloquially, I can't say that word. But you know what I mean? Like, I didn't mean recuse.
Yeah.
I meant recuse in sort of some sense, the quasi-sense of the word.
I don't know. I feel like we're all being duped in this way, that we're given all of these facts that are supposedly facts that we knew, but we don't know. I don't know how the recusal situation works when it comes to a state's attorney's race. Nobody in this room does. I don't know what a level 4 felony
recusals are pretty clear cut.
No,
I think recusals, if she truly thought there was a conflict, according to the Illinois Prosecutors Bar and the Bar Association, according to the National Attorneys General's Association,
they have all
weighed in and said, when you recuse yourself because there's a conflict, you recuse, your office no longer handles it.
But
you pass it along.
It feels like in some ways you're downplaying it, Justin, because like the argument you made earlier was that it sort of feels like, well, this is just this is prototypical Illinois or prototypical Cook County. Where's the outrage when other things happen? But just, to me, it doesn't have to be either or. Like, if you're kind of, it kind of feels like you're saying, well, this is just fake outrage from people because...
No, I would never say to you, Kevin, that your outrage is fake. Like, I'm all for people
okay,
having...
Okay, you're saying the theatrics may be a little bit amped up a little bit.
The formalized theatrics after the fact to almost take advantage of that outrage.
Well, of course they are. That's politics.
But that's the stuff that I'm just...
And but the outrage is real. I mean, like, people are absolutely pissed about this. Right. So, like, they're echoing what I like. I think a lot of people think and feel.
Yes, they are.
I'm like surprised. You're the most subdued person I know about this whole situation. Like,
I know.
You're the first person I've come across over the past week that's like, this is no big deal.
No, it's not a big deal. I just don't like the way that this story has fanned the flames of what I think. And I do agree to some extent with some of the people we heard on the air this hour talking about the fact that this is political. And I don't want my outrage to be politicized because I don't necessarily, if I am outraged about a guy in Chicago, celebrity, who comes down here and makes Chicago look bad by faking a hate crime. For what reason? I'm not even sure.
I mean, it's pretty obvious what reason.
What is the reason?
To advance his career and become
How is that even possible?
Because then he comes across as sort of like this voice for the black community or the gay community. He's this leader and he fought against MAGA and all those sorts of things. Yeah. That's very clearly what it appears here. But why else would he do it?
I don't know why else.
Really?
Isn't it pretty obvious he
did it to advance his career and give himself a platform? It raises awareness.
I think the why isn't necessarily as important as the what happened. And I think that, you know, obviously you look at any data of other people who have had fake crimes that they have called them in and they've put police through not even nearly this amount of manpower and costs and expenses and resources, that there's a different penalty for folks like you, me, or anyone listening than for Jussie Smollett. And so why? The why part of that is important if you want faith in the state's attorney's office. And we need to have faith in that. And when she comes out onto her publicity tour and starts giving answers that don't necessarily coincide with one another, that they conflict with one another, you start saying, well, why? Why in her op-ed piece today did she say, we didn't have enough evidence, we felt that we really weren't sure we could get a conviction, when you hear from the police department that they had mountains of evidence, of which maybe 15% of which we actually know right now. They have 85% out there that we don't even know,
that
some say it was an open and shut case, and then you go to a grand jury, get these 16 indictments, and then you sort of drop it, and it just doesn't feel or smell right.
That's my whole thing. I don't even really care about Jussie at this point. What I care about is what happened here. And I want to know because I live here. Mm-hmm. I have a right to know. If I can't trust the system, that's a problem.
Right.
And she's an elected office,
right.
And she answers to you and me and everyone here, not to Jussie or powerful people necessarily. This isn't what it's about. That office is not about that. And I know there have been plenty of issues between the police department and her, and I agree that there might be some politicization of this whole thing. But at the end of the day, we can't forget that at the core of this is really, there needs to be some sort of review so that the citizenry feels comfortable that this was not something that was given special treatment, or at least understand the reasons behind why we arrived at this point.
And you were talking about the FOP. Again, I understand that the politicizing of this is rubbing you the wrong way in some ways, or at least not
both
completely
sides. I don't
want to
make
you.
It just FOP.
No, I know you're not. I know you're not. I get your point there.
Father Flager as well.
There should be so much outrage from the entire police department. You put that much time in and then everything just gets thrown out the window. How would they not be deflated from that? How would they not be outraged?
That's how police feel.
Of course
they really do.
And why would they not feel that way after all those man hours and time and everything they put into it? And then, like that, it's thrown out the window, literally.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I don't know about that because I feel like from the get go on this story, and I know I'm in the minority in the room, but there has been nobody has been on the up and up on this story. And it has made me, as a consumer of the news, as a citizen of Chicago, as someone who works in journalism, my bells go off all the way across the board. Whether it's the Jussie Smollett and how it all was handled, the media coverage has to be on display as well, with the Chicago police and the way that there were so many leaks coming out of that office at the time.
I didn't find that.
Prosecution as well for dropping those charges. Nobody is on the up and up.
I found that a lot of the leaks were coming from the lawyers in the case.
No.
Because I know I went to several police officers who I typically like to get information from, and they would not release information
case. But these
and
were
so I'm just pointing
several
that out.
Law enforcement official sources
That's
from
right.
The media.
I did see that.
They were not lawyers. They were They went out of their way to say law enforcement officials say, and it was all off the record or leaks. And they're even asking, why that happened. And again, I'm not doing this. I don't want to be Trumpian about it, where it's like, how dare they leak? Who leaked? I don't care about that. But the point being, nothing was buttoned up on the up and up through this whole entire story.
But do you think some of that had to do with the fact that he had lawyers and he had sort of a posture from the beginning of this racist city and these are these officers in this police department that's under so much scrutiny that I can take advantage of that given this situation, and sort of that's maybe what angers Chicagoans pretty much as well. Like, that's what sort of fans the flames of this whole thing. That didn't need to be fanned. It didn't need to be fanned.
That's the last thing we need right now in America is what happened here.
Totally true.
Right, and it is off.
Yeah, okay.
All right, well, there's something else awful. There's a millennial crisis going on. You guys, you're going to want to hear about this, something affecting millennials, and we're going to talk about that with the few minutes we have before we get to Kim's News. And then something less controversial, we'll be talking more about the election here in Chicago tomorrow. But let's check in with Kim Gordon right now, see what's coming up top of the hour in the news.
Anna, the FAA says the fix for the MAX 8 jets has been delayed.
With me, Anna DeVlantis. Rose taking the day off today, and so Justin Kaufman is sitting in. Election coverage tomorrow, too, we should plug.
Tomorrow at the Billy Goat Tavern. Come on down.
No better venue for an election night show, man. I'm going to be over there just watching you guys do your thing, because it's fun to be there for election
night. When you're talking about Chicago election, you want to be gritty.
Politics, reporters, underground Chicago. Although they have cleaned it up a little bit in there.
It's a shame, isn't it?
You still get plenty of the Billy Goat vibe, but when you go into the bathroom, you feel like you walked in the Twilight Zone, because you're like, where the hell am I? It's like a five-star restaurant bathroom, and you used to like the one that had like writings on it. It was like a little closet with a toilet and a urinal, and it was very grimy, but now it's like this big fancy. You walk in, and you're like, what happened? It's still great, and they have this new private room, I think.
So, tomorrow night, 7 to 10, come on down to the Billy Goat Tavern on 430 North Michigan, underneath Michigan Avenue there, and we're going to be broadcasting live, and there'll be a host of pundits and a bunch of people doing analysis, and we're going to have candidates as well as some of the people who were in the general election who lost mayoral candidates are going to be
all with the sound of burgers being fried and the glasses being clinked.
The greasy grill.
Beer,
right? I just love it.
Right?
Great spot. Pro tip, they have really, really, really good grilled cheese if you're not into the burger thing. Because I know the cheeseburger's signature and everything, you got to go there a lot. But if you want to, you know, kind of go deep.
I always go deep. There's like a sixth or seventh part of that menu that I'm like, I wonder what they do if I ordered the perch dinner. I just want to know what's going to happen.
What the hell is that?
I wouldn't actually have it.
I like their bright. Hey, keep 50 cent coffee still at Billy Goat.
Get out. Is it still 50 cents?
It's good coffee.
It's good.
Thought of coffee when I
go. No. Well, I guess late night, 2 in the morning. What time
is it? You could go there at 7 a.m. and there's people who work the third shift that are drinking beers at the bar, so. it never stops there at the Billy Goat.
You're going to be crawling with political animals in there. You're not even, I know you booked your show and you've got great guests, I mean, think about the people who come in there. Right? They do every election night.
It's a great environment, a great atmosphere, so come on down. And, I was going to do sometimes my eyes are bigger than my stomach when it comes to radio. I was thinking about doing a blues band down there. Like, just to really, like, jam it out, get the electric guitar going. And then, like, when I started talking to Adam about Adam
he's
Phillips.
He's like,
cramped already. And I'm like, where are we going to plug these amps in? And I'm like, all right, just calm down. Politics is enough.
But think of the vibe of everybody coming and going and political chatter and the things you'll pick up in there. You could write columns based on what is overheard.
It's so fun.
Election night at the Billy Goat. We're all going. We're going to crash your party.
Right,
we're going to be there with you. So
be great. We can take the Jussie Smollett arguments and we'll just take it right to air.
Not like, the Billy Goat.
We've got brand new breaking news. We've got who the winner is in the mayor's race. But first, again,
you know what's funny? Last time I was at Billy Goat, the news was on and the Jussie Smollett story came up and some guy just belted out. He belted out something. He's not a fan of Jesse. Yeah. And everyone kind of just chuckled. So maybe avoid the small ads.
Yeah, you probably just want to talk all politics. But it'll be fascinating because you got the automatic races.
It does play into the election, though.
Kim Fox. Preckwinkle, relationship to Preckwinkle.
Can you imagine? I mean, just if you're Tony Preckwinkle and you're running this campaign and it's not going exactly the way you want. Just the idea that you're last week, you're like, all right, let's see what we can do here. Let's get some momentum going. And then Jussie Smollett, all things
like,
pops.
No!
And it somehow gets tied to her. And she's like,
So much
She's
for
like,
that.
I'm over here. I'm over here.
I don't even
not
like
part
the
of me.
Show Empire.
She did sort of get swept into that. But we'll be talking about politics coming up here on WGN. But first, let's get to the news. And for that, we head over to Kim Gordon. The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Bro is off today, so Justin Kaufman is here with us. He'll be hosting your election night special here on WGN Radio tomorrow, so listen in for that. We also have Lauren Lapka in with the studio with us, and K-Pow, Kevin Powell, here. And you guys will want to listen up to this, because did you hear the president has this, he's had a threat, another threat, he's reissued his threat that he may close down the southern border with Mexico. If immigration is not handled properly, and he has several demands to that effect. But here's a consequence that many people did not know about that might happen as a result, if he does. Did you know that 100%, just about 100%, never, it's never 100%, but maybe 99.99999% of avocados this time of year come in from Mexico?
Oh, dear God. Mm.
Your thoughts. No avocados at this period of time. I mean, I don't know how long could it last. Cinco de Mayo, right around the corner. What would you do?
What about all the guac?
Avocado toast? No mas?
I'll just go and find the most unripe avocados right now at the bottom, you know, where they're just like rocks.
I hate those when they're the only ones left in the pile.
I'm going to get all of them. I'm going to get everybody. You can have all the squishy ones that are ready now. I'm going to get those so that in 2 weeks
you're ready.
You can leverage that and sell them on secondary market as well.
And
make
save
a lot of
dough. The nuts.
Start planting your own, people.
Entrepreneurs.
Start planting your own. Yeah. You can do that too, right?
I think it's pretty long life. I mean, I think you have to plant them. Don't they blossom every, like, they're really hard to grow. It's like once every 2 years or something. I mean, but that's why it's like we do have them in California. But this time of year, apparently, they're all really coming from Mexico. And so this is a problem.
How will we survive? Thank God this didn't happen around the Super Bowl, because that's when that's the highest time of year where avocados get all the guacamole for the Super Bowl parties.
Seriously.
This worries me.
Imagine.
K-Pow, I see you as a big avocado guy, but are you an avocado toast guy? Will you go that route?
I like to do, I just eat it, just slices of it with breakfast. Yeah. It's a nice little side item with my scrambled eggs.
Sure.
But I'm a big guacamole guy, and I like to make guacamole, so this worries
me. Too.
Me.
I really love the avocados. I do.
Lauren, are you a avocado toast?
I don't like avocado at all, actually.
You don't like the texture. Is that it? Some people don't
the
like
taste.
The texture.
I don't like the taste. At all.
Oh, I love the taste.
Yeah, you're
love
a straight up avocado toast.
Well, I put jalapeno in it, and I like do like the full toast thing. I mix it up with some garlic, like little garlic or something, some onion, you know, just kind
of
like.
It's the perfect sort of thing you can dress up however you really want.
Totally.
You can eat it plain, or you can do what you just did.
And then they tell you it's good. It's like the rich and the omega 3s, and you're the good fats, and so you're eating the right kind of fats, which is important.
What would keep the president from keeping, or from making sure that the border stays open? Would it be everyone having this complete, oh my God, I cannot live without avocados? Like, would that do it?
Could be. Maybe we'll have the same sort of outrage as we do with Jussie Smollett, and, you know, maybe we can ride that for a little bit as well.
Sure, that could happen. I guess that's possible. But I think that this one hit close to home. The problem with the avocado, though, you're right, though, they're either the too hard when you go to the grocery store, or they're overly mushy. And what did you do? Sometimes they're too mushy even to make guacamole with. You know, when they're really squishy and they're kind of darker on the outside, it's like, ew.
Now, there has been an uptick in our society, and this has been something that has been well noted, that there is now, I think it's called avocado hand. They're injuries because people are so much more carving it out with the knife that they're they're cutting, like gouging their hands.
So
we did a segment on Cochrane about that. That's becoming like a thing. Like Doc Most was talking about, there are more injuries.
Wait, trying to remove the nut part of it?
It's the way that the knife is used to cut the avocado out.
Use a spoon.
That's not the easiest thing to dissect, because you kind of got to work the knife around the edge of it because you have it. Then you kind of twist it open, and then you got to get the pit out of it as well.
Right.
Some people do this technique with the pit, where you kind of smack the knife on it, and then you twist it a little bit. I like to do the spoon. I feel a little bit safer with that technique, but I can totally see why people are injuring themselves with the avocados.
You try to do that Top Chef technique, where you just take the knife and you slap it very quickly into the middle nut, and you try to grab it out, but that never works for me.
It's
like you're like banging it, and you're trying to like get your knife and just hit it, and you're like, oh my gosh, I can see where you get injured doing that part.
You lost two fingers. That's why you have only two fingers right now, which is crazy.
Well, you know, kind of Mayor Rahm Emanuel style. But then you can do the, you know, you do the slicing, and I kind of slice and dice it into a whole bunch of little pieces. But that's like,
that's,
I can see.
Too. Yeah, no, there's a, it's a thing.
I didn't know there was an avocado hand. It's like a,
it's an avocado finger or something like that. I forgot what, there's like a thing now.
People are losing part of their finger?
Yeah.
Glad I don't have to worry about it.
It's the way that it's the, it's, I forgot where, but on the hand there's a spot where it's exactly how you're carving out an avocado that you get cut, like on your palm.
Oh, they're going through kind of the back end of it.
Yeah, it's like a gap.
It goes through the skin.
Much more than you would think. Yeah.
Mm. Oh.
Saying
kind of like slicing a bagel. Isn't bagel like the most notorious for you kind of trying to slice a bagel? It's really not an easy way to do it.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't want to sidetrack.
Are you going to get back to the bagel debate?
But I don't understand what happened over the weekend. Was it that they showed up in St. Louis?
They did. What happened there?
First of all, St. Louis. I mean, St. Louis always tries to act like they have the best food. And if you ever eaten in St. Louis, folks, they do not have the best food. I can guarantee you that.
Well, they think their pizza's the best, too. They have a St. Louis pizza. Have you ever had the St. Louis pizza? My gosh.
It's not good.
Please. Pizza anywhere in Missouri is pretty awful.
Yes. It's not good.
Well said.
So somebody posted a picture of what appeared to be somebody bringing bagels to an office. Hey, guys, brought bagels today. All right. And obviously, we all know the way you cut a bagel, right? You have it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Horizontally. This the way these were cut, trying to paint the picture. I'm sure many people saw the picture already because this was a hot topic over the weekend. But basically, they like cut a bunch of different slices from the top down.
Right.
Almost like you would a loaf of bread. Rather than like having it like like a regular bagel.
So like they went slices of a bagel.
So they went from over the top with it.
Okay.
So like over the top like this on the bagel, which created many
big
little
chunky
big
pieces.
Little pieces.
They were like thin. They were thin.
Right.
They were thin pieces, so they cut it almost like you
like
from the top
bites.
Down like a tomato. Like tomato slices.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like
if you ever have like a tomato
slices.
Like on like on a burger or
right.
like something like that. It's more so that way where it went from top to bottom rather than like the horizontal slice, the traditional slice with the bagel. Now, there was outrage, of course, by many people who thought it was an atrocity that it was done this way. I actually initially saw it and said, that's not a horrible idea because the bagel goes a little bit farther. Plus, if it's for an office, every week there is a box of like Dunkin' bagels in one of our kitchens here at WGN that normally
true.
Like John DeCoste brought in for the morning show
because
he's the Dunkin' guy or the whatever, the morning guy. And when I first saw it, I said, you know what, that's actually not a horrible idea because you open the box like around here, and I'm sure at many workplaces, and it's like a third of the bagels left, and somebody bit both sides.
Oh,
and it's just kind of
the worst.
I'm like, this is actually how you can
wasting good bagels.
You could maybe maximize the bagel a little bit better with this technique rather than everyone just kind of grabbing and ripping apart bagels and then leaving into the box for the coworkers.
Right.
So I wasn't as outraged as many other people.
And it's called St. Louis style because this is how they do it in St. Louis. Is that what we're supposed to believe?
I guess so, but you know, I didn't. I actually thought it was a pretty decent idea to do it that way.
I would like it too, just because then you get a little bit of different kinds of bagels.
That's a good point too. You get a variety. You get the whole onion bagel.
Yeah. But you need the heaviness cheese. Of the bagel to put the cream cheese on. It can't be a thin little slice to have.
That's
when there's too much cream cheese, it doesn't have the right ratio.
Unless you get like the whipped kind and you just kind of dip your little piece of bread in there. Maybe.
I see what you're saying.
It's almost
there.
Like a chip dip situation all of a sudden out of nowhere. Where normally like a bagel, a bagel's a lot. I mean, a bagel filling up. That's a lot of carbs happening there. So this
very
is
dense.
Maximizing a bagel, and you can supply a little bit more bagel for your coworkers.
You don't get the cream cheese on your hand. From the center hole,
and if you're injury prone, you also eliminate that problem too, because the slicing's easier.
I love that Kevin is all about the coworkers. He's just like
it's about us. It's about all of us, really. When Kevin's worried about food, it's kind of he's a giver. He's very very good at that. Speaking of the St. Louis area, also, do you see this day? I honestly thought this was an April Fool's joke when I woke up and saw this news, but it's not. This is one of those things in this world where sometimes it's hard to decipher the difference between real news and fake news and what's going on. On April Fool's, it can be very confusing. This one is a real, real story. Burger King, in the St. Louis area only for right now, is serving up the Impossible Whopper. Mm-hmm. Now, what is an Impossible Whopper, you ask? Well, the Impossible Whopper is a beef-free, meat-free, entirely plant-based veggie burger. Now, here's the weird part. I'm a fan of the veggie burger. We all know that. But this is the weird part. In taste tests, blind taste tests, they say that meat eaters can't even tell the difference.
I have heard positive things about that particular fake meat.
You have?
Yes.
Have you known anybody?
Why St. Louis?
Why St. Louis? Like, it's the middle of the country. Maybe they test things there because they don't have good pizza or good food there.
Right? Yeah.
We're here to help.
It was a slam.
This tastes great.
We're here just in the nick of time, right, to deal with this.
You're not a plant-based guy? You don't like the plant-based meat?
Nah.
Just overall taste-wise, or are you just old-fashioned, like, I gotta have
sort of old-fashioned. I'm not saying it necessarily tastes horrible or anything like that. And I've heard about this particular brand, and I've heard good things about it, but come on. A burger is nothing better. My traditional burger.
But if it's just as satisfying and tastes the same, you're saving the planet, Kevin.
I'll try the plant-based burger and report back to you. I've never actually had it, so...
Yeah, I'm actually very curious.
Now look at that.
You eat everything, Lauren? You do the meat, you do the veggie, you do the everything?
Just a picky eater, but I like meat, veggies, all that.
There's some weird things you don't like. You don't like avocados. We know that.
Tomatoes.
Can't do tomatoes. Anything else on that list of things?
Mushrooms? How about mushrooms?
Yeah, not really a big fan of mushrooms, but if they're on a pizza, I'm not going to be freaking out.
Are you more so turned off on the texture of certain food, or is it simply flavor?
Fish. So I don't like fish because of texture.
Okay.
Which is a big one. That's a hard one not to like.
What do you have on your pizza, Lauren? What's your go-to pizza? Here's what you order.
Sausage, onions, green peppers, black olives.
Oh, you're a good Chicago girl. That is like perfect.
Sausage, pepper, onion, great combo. Yeah, good.
And Justin, you seem like a plant-based guy.
I like the plant-based idea, and I'm very curious about the Impossible Burger, because if it does taste exactly like a hamburger, I think that this will be a breakthrough for our society. I know the meat plant. I've railed on this before, and people know this. They get upset and they go, "Okay, you get upset with me." But you know, if you look at where we are with climate change, a third of the planet is being used, and the resources are being used for meat production, and that at a certain point with the methane from the cows and the amount of land you have to use to do these monster industrial industrial size spaces and all of, thousands and thousands of miles of just grass so these cows can eat, so that we can then kill the cows and then eat them. It just seems inefficient for a time when our planet needs to be efficient.
So we should eat bugs. That's a new thing.
What they're saying, and this is a plant-based, and I get that, but they're saying that if the whole world switched from meat to beans, same protein, same everything, the taste was the same. If we just made that switch.
Have you had steak before, Justin?
Have you been to Gibson's?
We would save the planet. It would just, all climate change would go away. But that's the thing. Nobody wants to lose the steak.
Yeah, well, if the taste is there, that's what I don't understand. First of all, as someone who enjoys plant-based foods, I just feel like I enjoy the taste of plant-based foods, and so it's strange that they actually are trying to do this as a substitute for meat eaters and attract that crowd. I swear I make a veggie chili that a meat eater would not even know. I swear to God, you guys would not know.
Really?
You would not know, Kevin.
Okay,
I'm gonna make it one time.
I do veggie chili.
It's super spicy. Maybe that helps, but it's really, really delicioso. So I'll have to make that.
Spicy works. If you're ever trying to cover something up that doesn't.
Does.
Just add more hot sauce. No one will notice.
It's so true. You know, they have veggie burgers now, too. Have you seen these that bleed like meat? Like, they put beet juice in it, and they're all the rage.
I think that's what this Impossible Meat is. Where
there's another one, a competing one, because they have it on Randall Street, and it's like one of these ones that's gone national, one of these, like, high-tech companies. Yeah. The Beyond Burger.
Yeah. Beyond Burger.
But the new version doesn't bleed. I thought they were so proud of the bleeding.
I can't wait to get a burger at your election night party tomorrow, the Billy Goats. Night, Justin.
You're thinking that's making you hungry for a real burger?
I really want a burger right now, but I'm going to hold off till tomorrow when we're at the goat.
And you like one that doesn't bleed with beet juice. You like the real juice.
Covered in grease off the flat top.
What if you came in there and they're like, no more beef.
Plant-based.
What if they did that?
Double.
Can you imagine? The Impossible Burger now being served at the Billy Goat.
Pitch the plant-based burger to the cooks behind the counter at Billy Goat. See how that goes.
The look of confusion on the faces, I could just picture it perfectly.
No fries. No,
what?
No fries. No fries.
I love our listeners because they always have the answer to everything. And they do. We have such smart listeners. 630 says, roll the avocado on the table with the skin on until it's soft and smushy, then cut it open so that you work around it. So if you're making guacamole, it's all already pre-smashed, I guess.
Oh, there you go.
So there's a pro tip.
It doesn't sort of bruise it. Don't they tell you to be delicate with the avocado?
I like to be delicate.
Kind of slowly
it does
toss
feel like,
guacamole.
You know, yeah.
Whatever works for you.
Yeah. If that works for you, that works for you.
Now I want guacamole.
I totally do. That's on the menu. All right, this weekend was like 20s, guys. Let's talk about this because we want to get this in before we get to politics. And also we have the attorney for R. Kelly calling in because he'd like to see the emails and the correspondence between He's trying to say what transpired here with Avenatti.
It's a great story.
He brought home, you know, these victims, and he was representing some of the people relevant to the R. Kelly case. Well, what did they do? What were they saying?
He's got a point, because Kim Fox, the state's attorney, of course, as we found out, had some sort of correspondence with someone close to the Smollett family or Smollett case. And now the lawyers for R. Kelly want to make sure she didn't do the same in their case. And, you know, obviously there's been some accusations come forth from Michael Avenatti and company. So Michael Greenberg, the lawyer of R. Kelly.
Steve
Greenberg. He wants to know if he wants to make those open and transparent, which I'm not sure judges are going to go for, because conversations with a state's attorney kind of fall under client lawyer privilege. You know, that kind of idea. So that's where you would really start to get into, can you subpoena or can you FOIA conversations between a state's attorney and clients?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where that goes, because he certainly thinks he has a case there and is after something in particular, something specific.
He's not wrong. I mean, she's on the hook. She's right now, everyone's questioning whether or not she's being transparent. And Kim
in
Fox,
that case.
So, yeah, so why not take a shot at trying to get something that might benefit your client down the road?
Okay, that is coming up. But right now we want to talk about this story here. So it was 20s this weekend, not great weather, right? Tom Skilling says we can expect close to a 70 or potentially in the 70s on Sunday. But this past weekend, we didn't have great weather, but we're moving into more warmer weather. And then so mosquitoes just around the corner, and we'll be thinking about them again. And there's this new effective mosquito repellent that is researchers have figured out. And it's not what you think. It's really interesting. It apparently it's proven effective, but it's dubstep music.
Yeah,
what?
Right on.
Dubstep music is scaring away the mosquitoes. It's like one of the best repellent sprays, according
not just mosquitoes.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I'll do whatever it takes to combat mosquitoes.
Oh,
in my
they're
backyard.
The worst, aren't
whatever
they?
Whatever it takes.
They are the worst.
And you gotta. Everyone has one of these. Like, I am one of those people. They love me. I get 47 on, like, one leg, 20-something on the other.
And then they don't bite the person next to you.
Right. I don't get that.
Even if they're not wearing repellent.
Right.
Why is that?
And I'm one of those people, so I hate it. Maybe I'll start blasting dubstep.
Okay, so a little example. We want to just, for you're just like, oh, dubstep, what's that again? What does that sound like? Well, this is.
I might take my chances with a mosquito
bite.
Yeah,
I don't know. In the study, listen to this before you judge, a scientific journal, Arcta Tropica, the international team of researchers wrote that sound and its reception are crucial for reproduction, survival, and population maintenance of many animals, and including the, oh my gosh, the mosquito goes in more in depth. In insects, low frequency vibrations facilitate sexual interactions, whereas noise disrupts the perception of signals. So it sort of disrupts their mojo.
Huh.
The mosquitoes don't like it.
Not just for mosquitoes.
I have to say, like, the idea in my head, I have this idea that, you know, wherever the mosquitoes are at, and they're really, really bad and they're biting you. Mm-hmm. Replacing it with dubstep music. It's a 50-50 here. I mean, imagine now that they're not around, but you're still in your backyard, and all you hear is this.
You're by the campfire.
You're by the campfire.
You can't
all hear
the crackling because this is
summertime's a good time for, like, chill music in the backyard.
Right. I can't hear you. The dubstep music is too loud. But Lauren's not getting bitten, right. So it's okay.
Did you want a s'more?
Imagine a party on Rose Deck, and we're all hanging out, and we bring the dubstep music.
Sort
what would the neighbors think?
Yeah,
definitely get
though.
A neighbor call.
In his townhome community.
Our deck parties.
But the adults exposed to the dubstep music, and specifically the dubstep music, found that they were copulated far less often than those in an area with no music. So they say that it can delay host attack, reduce blood feeding, and disrupt mating rituals. So there you go. It's a study for everything.
I'll give it a shot.
There's so many jokes in there.
You're not going to go there?
That's what I'm saying.
After what you've said today on this very radio program, Justin, you're going to back off now?
No, I just think it's funny. Like, dubstep gets in the way of mating rituals, and then it makes flash to, like, the club. And you're like, yeah, does it? I'm not sure. Maybe it does.
But you wonder. It's like, I don't know. It's how they figure this stuff out. And, you know, I remember when they figured out that Skin So Soft from Avon was somehow a repellent. Because you're at a party, just like the one you're describing, Lauren, where you were getting bitten. Yep. And, like, your mom wasn't. And you're like, well, why is that? And why is her best friend not getting bitten? And they're like, wait a minute. Skin So Soft from Avon is actually a mosquito repellent. And this is how you figure this stuff out.
Did it work?
Yeah. Yes. And then they started marketing it as a mosquito repellent. They had a little, like, spray top bottle, and suddenly Avon was on to the whole marketing of, like, it works. It totally, totally works. I just think the dubstep music, can you imagine, though? You're sitting at the party. I can see you, Justin, this is your kind of party, isn't it? This is what you do?
This is it, yeah. I like to sit on the porch, get a nice iced tea, be contemplative about the day that just happened.
Just be sitting in the boat, fishing.
Talking about plant-based burgers.
Oh, got my Impossible Burger. I've got the copy of The Atlantic in the other. A nice iced tea and dubstep, you know? I don't have too many. I don't feel like I run the social circle that's really pumping dubstep. I just don't know if that's my scene. K-Pow seems like he might be more of a
me
hanging out in one of these clubs.
Me?
Yeah.
Do you know me? It's my nightmare.
It's so weird because I can get the beat could be cool, but can you imagine listening to dubstep at a low level? I feel like that's just not allowed.
Right, you gotta blast it, right?
What are the rules of dubstep? Someone tell me.
Yeah, exactly. You can't listen to this music as low as we are right now.
Right.
That will not stop.
Can you imagine? It's scaring the mosquitoes away. It's okay. Yeah. Just don't worry about it. And if you have to have it loud enough that the mosquitoes hear it, I mean, then it's kind of becomes the theme of your party. Like, it sort of takes over the whole theme.
All of a sudden, glow sticks are appearing. You don't know how they got
right. That's what I was missing, glow sticks.
Yep.
Yeah, I just never really got into the glow stick scene.
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
But Lauren, if it keeps away the mosquitoes, would you be willing to deal with a little dubstep music at your party?
Yeah,
maybe have a little dubstep music party this summer?
Might do my own little experiment this summer, for sure.
There you go.
To see. Because I can't stand it. And then when you shower, it's the worst. It just starts itching everywhere. Everything about mosquitoes.
Do you forget to put on the repellent? Is that the kind of thing?
No,
that you
it
do?
Just doesn't.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I put out those citronellas and stuff. They never seem to work for me at all.
I don't
ever.
It.
It's like I totally set that up because those are like nice for mood and they're nice for a party.
They
and you just put them all
too.
Out there and they smell so good. You're like, this is perfect. This is the exact thing you need to scare away the mosquitoes, and it doesn't seem to work for me.
Yeah, I want to know what's in my blood because something is just really tasty to mosquitoes, and nothing seems to change their mind.
It's got to be a science to that whole thing. What's your blood type?
I have no idea.
You don't know?
No.
I wonder, because I think we need to find out from our listeners. There's got to be some science there to blood types and mosquito biting.
Yeah, 708 says a few years ago they were told that
I'm O. That's so true.
You'll get more mosquito bites than others.
Interesting. Why?
I don't know. That's it seems like there's such anecdotal proof to this, because when you're at the barbecue, there's always that one person who, doesn't matter where they're sitting or where they move to or how many they swat away or if they put on the repellent, they're the ones getting bitten.
Mm-hmm.
And that's me. And that's you. It's always happening. So maybe it's the O blood type. Thank you, 708, for telling us that. All right, we are going to transition here and talk about mayoral politics. And we have an election tomorrow.
That's right.
And there are some aldermanic races as well, the treasurer's race. And we want to get everybody up to speed on what's happening with that. Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle face off tomorrow. And the polls are showing that Lori is leading pretty handily. But it always matters on turnout on a day like that, which when you typically right now you're seeing the election board say that they don't really have high hopes for turnout tomorrow.
And who does a lower turnout favor in this case?
That's a good question.
In past elections, the establishment candidate usually will be the person who benefits. But that there isn't necessarily an incumbent, but Tony Preckwinkle obviously is that person. So we'll find out. So we're going to go to Heather now. Heather Sharone from the Daily Line joins us now on the line. She's covering the election, and she is with us in the final hours here before it all goes down. Heather, good to talk to you.
Heather, can you hear us? We got you. Hey, Heather.
Can you hear me now?
I'm sorry.
I'm here.
Apologize. Yes, we got you now.
Hi, Heather.
Oh, good. Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
I am excited that Election Day is here. The end is in sight. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. It might be a train. I don't know.
It does feel like a long time coming here, particularly in the mayor's race that drew a lot more of attention because of the sheer number of candidates, the fact that Rahm Emanuel decided not to run. And then I think Lori Lightfoot, I think a lot of people were somewhat surprised by her her surging in the polls and eventually becoming victorious, facing off against Preckwinkle tomorrow. As we head into the home stretch, we were just talking about turnout. Typically, that is what you talk about. In this case, looking at the polls and what we've seen in terms of the support for Lori, do you think there is a chance that Tony Preckwinkle can pull this one out?
Sure. There's always a chance. You know, she is backed by, Tony Preckwinkle is backed by the Chicago Teachers Union and the SEIU, the Service Employee International Union, and they have a proven track record of getting their people to the polls. So if the turnout is low, and we saw Tony Preckwinkle predict this at a debate a couple weeks ago, that could help her. The issue, of course, is that all of the polls that we've seen since the first round of voting on February 26th have shown that Lori Lightfoot has a commanding lead in pretty much every part of the city and amongst every demographic. So I think it wouldn't be the first time that this mayoral race shocked everybody, but if Preckwinkle wins tomorrow, I think that will be a shock. But it is completely possible, especially considering all of the twists and the turns that this race has taken.
When you are, Heather, when it's the last day, and this is such an important day for both candidates, can you discern from their schedules and where they're at what their election strategy is?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you can sort of, you know, try to sort of figure out what the tea leaves are telling you. Lori Lightfoot spent the day on the far northwest side. She was greeting commuters at the Jefferson Park train station, and she was at the Big Top restaurant in Norwood Park, which is, you know, Higgins Avenue landmark there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tony Preckwinkle was hopscotching around, too. I think she was on the south and the west sides a little bit. And, you know, it's, you know, she was also in Uptown. So, you know, it's a little bit of, you know, sort of catch-as-catch-can. You know, what events do I have to do and how many voters can I touch between then and now? But, you know, it's, you know, I think important to sort of take a moment and say, you know, Lori Lightfoot is an African-American woman. She's gay. You know, she's married. She has a child with her wife, you know, was campaigning in Jefferson Park, which, you know, isn't too far away from Portage Park, where in, you know, 1983, Harold Washington was basically driven out of the neighborhood by people yelling, you know, racist epithets. And, you know, I know it seems like things are, you know, perpetually getting worse, but I think it's important to sort of, you know, look back and say how far we've come, you know, in my lifetime. And tomorrow's going to be a historic day. You know, whomever wins, the city's first African-American mayor, the largest city to be represented by an African-American woman, and potentially Chicago's first gay mayor if Lori Lightfoot does win.
Right, and I think the largest city to elect an openly gay woman as a mayor. I think
absolutely.
Houston had Anise Parker a few years back, and actually she came in for a Lori Lightfoot fundraiser supporting her.
She did.
Effort.
I got a lot of emails from her saying, hey, go vote for Lori. So, yeah.
What about the whole Kim Fox controversy? You saw the protests today. You had dueling protests. Mm-hmm. You saw the FOP protesting how Kim Fox's office handled the Jussie Smollett office. What is she doing? Calling for her resignation. And then the Reverend Jackson and Father Flager questioning the police and supporting Kim Fox and saying it's only because she's an African-American woman and you're just questioning her office and you guys don't like each other anyway. But does she play a factor being having her political mentor be Tony Preckwinkle? Does that play, are you sensing that that's going to play a big role, a small role, no role at all in this election tomorrow?
It's hard to tell, but I don't think the controversy over the Smollett case and Kim Fox's role in it has helped Tony Preckwinkle in any way, because if nothing else, it's reminded members of the police union and members of the firefighters that they really dislike Tony Preckwinkle and they really dislike Kim Fox, which is why you saw, you know, the firefighters union endorse Lori Lightfoot along with two of the most conservative members of the city council, Alderman Anthony Napolitano and Alderman Nicholas Spezzato, you know, also endorsed Lori Lightfoot. So, you know, it's sort of hard to tell how that all is going to play out because it's a little bit of sort of a one step removed proxy issue. But, you know, again, Lori Lightfoot has been sort of hammering home this message of I'm change. I'm going to come into City Hall and I'm going to bring in the light, just like her campaign slogan says, and sort of change everything. And I think this sort of, you know, story, which makes us all sort of grumble and say, gosh, you know, Chicago looks like a clown show on the national stage. I think that makes it harder for Tony Precklin to sort of say, wait, I am actually very progressive and I have worked for a long time on these issues and I have a really long record of achievements. So I think that that's a little bit of the story that has sort of, you know, troubled Preckwinkle's campaign. First it was Ed Burks, then it was Danny Solis, and it's just been sort of difficult for her to sort of separate herself from that sort of Chicago corruption storyline, although, of course, you know, she hasn't been accused of any wrongdoing right. or anything along those lines.
Heather, how much of this, and we've talked about this before, but how much of the not Preckwinkle vibe that we get from the established, from some of the neighborhoods in Chicago, how much of that is political because Tony Preckwinkle, of course, is the head of the Cook County Party, Democrat Party? Is this sort of a mutiny from underneath the ranks, or are we in a new day and age when Democrats can speak for themselves?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think, you know, Tony Preckwinkle stood by Cook County Assessor Joe Berrios, who was defeated by Fritz Kagi, who sort of said, I'm going to come into the assessor's office. I'm going to clean up this office. I'm going to remove sort of the cronyism and the nepotism, and I'm going to fix how your house is assessed so you are actually paying what you should pay. And I think that, you know, Toni Preckwinkle was a longtime ally of Joe Berrios, and she felt like she, you know, had to or wanted to stand by him. And that really hurt her progressive sort of credibility because, you know, Joe Berrios was such a polarizing figure for sort of all of the huge investigations that I give so much credit to my colleagues at the Chicago Tribune and ProPublica, Illinois, for really pointing out how, you know, people in wealthy parts of the city were essentially paying less than they should have, and people on the south and the west side were paying significantly more than they should have, which, you know, a lot of people said was exactly backward. So I think that played a big role. I don't think, can sort of discount how angry people were about the sweetened beverage tax, which Tony Preckwinkle really championed as a way to get the county sort of on better financial footing. Just judging by the anger that my in-laws felt and how they would drive like 1,000 miles.
You heard it. You're right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, she had sort of all of that sort of baggage, for lack of a better term, sort of dogging her when she got into the mayoral race. And let's not forget, everybody expected this conversation to be about Rahm Emanuel getting ready for a third term, right?
No question.
And that's not what happened. So Tony Preckwinkle sort of saw this opening and said, look, these open seat mayoral contests literally come around once in a generation. This is only the fourth in the last century, so I got to take my shot. And, you know, there were a lot of other candidates who felt the same way. So, you know, she made it into the runoff. She's here. And, you know, I'm not counting her out because, you know, she's won big elections before, and she could do it again.
Yeah. Well, Heather Sharone is with the Daily Line. Always a pleasure, and I'm looking forward to all your reports tomorrow as Election Day is upon us. Heather, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Heather. We appreciate you weighing in.
Always. I'm going to drink all of the coffee tomorrow.
You're going to need it. Although it might be an early night. You don't know. We'll have to see.
We'll see. Thanks again, guys.
Always, Heather. Appreciate hearing your viewpoints about the elections and beyond. You know, it's interesting because if you look... Hang on here. We're going to wait to come on the radio from the stream. So stay with us here for a second. This This is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Ro is off today, and thank you for joining us here on WGN Radio. And thanks for joining us on the stream earlier on your smart speakers and all the lovely ways you can listen to WGN Radio. We are talking to R. Kelly's lawyer right now because there's a new sort of wedge to this story, and a lot of people have been talking about the Jussie Smollett stuff that's going on in town. We were talking about the election earlier, but something interesting is going on here too. Steve Greenberg, the attorney for R. Kelly, is asking law enforcement officials preserve all your communications that you've ever had with Cook County prosecutors and Michael Avenatti. We remember Michael Avenatti. For a minute, he was running for president. He represented the Kavanaugh accusers. He had some R. Kelly accusers that he brought forth. But now he's at the center of a federal probe in an alleged shakedown of Nike. And we want to talk to Steve Greenberg, R. Kelly's lawyer, about why he's asking for such a thing. Steve, thank you for joining us here on WGN Radio.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You sound a little tired. Are you? How's it going for you?
Oh, I'm tired, but why I'm asking for it should be obvious to everyone. Everything the man touches comes up with some kind of problem. You know, he may have been a fine lawyer back in the day, but it seems like lately he just makes stuff up and tries to bully people into getting his way, and I think that's what happened here.
So what do you think you would find here if you do get all of the communications? Do you think there's something Avenatti was suggesting he was going to get for this, or do you think it was something Kim Fox's office might have done inappropriately? What do you think you would get here?
Well, you know, let's start out with when he started focusing on R. Kelly. He claims he's been working on it for 18 months. But the timing of when he started and when he went public was almost, I think it was the day after he got accused of bankruptcy fraud. And then if you draw it out, you'll see every time he was accused of some kind of misconduct, he came out with an outrageous allegation against R. Kelly. First he had one tape, then all of a sudden he had a second tape, then a third tape, then he had witnesses who were coming forward and so forth. What we want to find out is, how did he get these people? One of his clients was on one of the network morning shows and said that she made her allegations in 2003. Nobody filed the case. The prosecutors, the police look into it, and they decide that they can't prove this case. All of a sudden, she calls whatever hotline or whatever number Kim Fox says to call, and next thing we know, she's represented by Michael Avenatti. Now, how does that come about? Was she referred by someone in the state's attorney's office? Were other people, they said today that many of the people involved in the case were represented by him. People had non-disclosure agreements with Mr. Kelly. Did the state's attorney's office say, call Michael Avenatti, see what he can do about your non-disclosure agreement? He's got a lot of experience with that from the Stormy Daniels. Hmm. I don't know. But I think we better look into it,
Mr. Greenberg. You know, reading these stories today, there was thoughts that the judge would see this as attorney-client privilege, and you being a lawyer would understand attorney-client privilege. Is it hard to get around that?
Who's attorney-client privilege?
Now that it would be tough to be able to make the state's attorney turn over any of their correspondence because of attorney-client privilege.
Is this the kind of thing you can actually seek and get? Would it be likely that you would be successful with this request?
So for the state's attorney, it would be what's called a work product privilege. These people are not their clients, but because they're witnesses in a case, the rules are a little bit different, and we may be able to get that. As far as Avenatti goes, you know, that's one of the worst things about this. He's not an attorney in Illinois. He hasn't filed the paperwork to practice in Illinois. He didn't go to a court and seek to be admitted on a temporary basis in Illinois. Yet they allowed him to represent witnesses before the grand jury and otherwise. It's our position that he's engaged in the unauthorized practice of law. And in fact, if he's engaged in the unauthorized practice of law, none of the conversations, none of the communications can be privileged. There's a number of other exceptions that we can also rely upon, but that would certainly be the starting point.
So he was in Santa Ana, California today, facing the bank and wire fraud
prosecution piece of that whole thing. There's also that other piece about Nike. Just separately, let me ask you about that, Steve. As an attorney, I mean, it sounds as if he's facing some very serious charges here, and he certainly knows that. If he, even in interviews, he's admitted that things aren't looking great for him at this particular moment.
Well, he doesn't admit they're not looking great. He admits that he's
scared. He says, pray for me. Please, I'm scared. This is a frightening moment. And you've never heard these words come out of, at least I have never heard these words come out of Michael Avenatti's mouth. And he's been doing countless interviews during the course of the Kavanaugh and then the R. Kelly cases.
Right. And you know, he goes to court today, and all he can do is tweet about me all day. He's obsessed with me. He calls me names. He doesn't know anything about me. He doesn't. I can guarantee you, he's never looked into my legal work at all. But again, he's deflecting from his own problems. Michael Avenatti should worry about his own problems. Try and figure out how he's going to be able to come here and testify when he needs to, when his bond restricts him to Illinois or to California and New York, and worry about the allegations Nike's making against him, that the federal government's making against him. Why he didn't pay his taxes and so forth.
Yeah,
I don't know why anyone's listening to the guy.
Well, it's fascinating. He's had such a prominent role and a public role in so many huge cases that have made attracted national attention. And you're right, he did seem to sort of pop onto the scene here in Chicago. We're like, whoa, whoa, with the R. Kelly stuff. One of the things he brought forward, Steve, I want to ask you about this, is he alleged that he had VHS tapes of Kelly having sex with an underage girl. He turned them over to the prosecutor. He was pretty clear that this was a slam dunk when he came on our show, when he talked publicly about this, that he not only represents victims and their families, but also has these videotapes. He said there might be a second one. He seemed to indicate to us this kind of evidence is out there. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I can tell you that the man says whatever the man feels like saying. One of the things we raise in our motion is Avenatti said, I've got this tape. I've watched the tape. I know what's on the tape. Then I showed the tape to CNN. Well, right there, that's a felony. Every state in the union, that's a felony right there. Someone should be investigating him for that. But he says whatever he wants. If it were up to Michael Avenatti, we would just dispense with the judge, the jury, and we go straight to the gallows in this country. Although when it comes to Michael Avenatti's cases, apparently that's not the procedure that should be followed. The man is a hypocrite. He's got the greatest double standard. Do unto others not as you would do unto me.
Mr. Greenberg, the issue withstanding and notwithstanding, we could talk about Michael Avenatti as a lawyer the entire time, but is the case here to defend R. Kelly on the fact that Michael Avenatti is involved here? Is that the strategy to try and get R. Kelly off?
Well, the strategy is to beat the cases, and in order to do that, we have to attack them with every aspect we can. You know, you start at the beginning when you're attacking a criminal case. The beginning of these cases appear to be either Fox's public outcry or Avenatti coming on the scene. All of the cases are old. I think the most recent case is a decade old. From what I've seen, there was almost no investigation except in one case that took place even within the last few months. Within the last few years, everything is old and stale. And then you've got this guy thumping his chest saying you got to prosecute these cases. So I think these cases were prosecuted hastily because of the pressure, because he was standing in the lobby of the courthouse. So I'm not making it about him. What I'm making it about is why are these cases filed when the evidence isn't any good? The evidence is stale. They haven't talked to witnesses. They haven't talked to victims, and they're letting someone else do their job.
Well, you seem to be pointing a pretty strong finger at Kim Fox there. Do you believe that their office is mishandling this?
The Cook County State's Attorney's Office has great prosecutors. I think at the top they got problems these days. Yes, I think they mishandled these prosecutions, and they shouldn't have brought them.
And would you draw a parallel between what you saw with the Jussie Smollett case and this case? Are you trying to say there's some sort of pressure or that the fact that Avenatti came on the scene as part of this case was a result of something that he had a special sort of ability to influence in this case?
I I think that, the Smollett case informs us when it comes to Kim Fox listens to people. Kim Fox listens to celebrity. Kim Fox can be influenced in her decision-making or how she handles a case. That's where I would draw the line on the similarities. Totally different factual situations. The Smollett case, the police investigated. They felt very strong about their evidence in that case. Our case, they didn't investigate. When they did investigate years ago, they didn't bring the charges. Anna, you've been around for I don't want to date you, but you've been around for a long
time.
Sure.
We've had, I've talked to you about many, many cases back to your Drew Peterson days.
So have you ever seen a case where prosecutors rejected the case almost two decades ago and new prosecutors decided to file the case without ever interviewing a single witness? Without ever getting, it's not like they all of a sudden got new DNA evidence or anything like that. I've never seen anything like that.
I think the allegations about R. Kelly out there before, to most of us in the journalism community, it seemed strange that everything got dropped and there were some questions about how that all happened back in the day. You're right, though, Steve. It surprises me that there has been no interviews of victims at this stage. That is surprising to me, and I take you at your word at that, if that's right. Happened. That part doesn't seem right. If you think that there's some sort of pressure here, that would be unfortunate. It would be unfortunate to see someone like Avenatti, who now has a mountain of his own legal troubles, having anything to do with that. But certainly it's suspect, given what we know about Michael Avenatti. He can't possibly represent anymore, can he? Have you heard any more from him? I know he's going back and forth with you on social media, it sounds like. But is he going to be involved in the case?
It's my position that he couldn't represent anyone from the start because he's not a licensed attorney here in Illinois, and I think the rules are very clear that he couldn't do that. Beyond that, we've got someone who I think we now know is willing to say anything to get his way. So who knows what kind of influence he had on these individuals that he influenced, that he's representing, and how do we know that whatever they say now, when the police go talk to them, or the couple that went in front of the grand jury, how do we know that what they're saying is fact versus stuff that was fed to them or they were encouraged to say by Avenatti?
Steve,
I mean, when you've got someone, and I've said this before, he is entitled to the same presumption of innocence as anyone else, the presumption of innocence, which he is unwilling to give R. Kelly. The presumption of innocence. And R. Kelly, it should be presumed innocent. But when you've got someone who has these kinds of accusations of saying these kinds of things about people, of an extortionist, an accused extortionist, who's sort of the key person behind all of these facts, wouldn't you be concerned?
What's next in this case, Steve, in terms of when you'll find out if your request will be granted and about preserving the communications here? What happens next? Bring us up to speed.
Well, apparently the communications of the state's attorney's office are preserved as a matter of course, although I've got some information that some of the communications may have taken place on Kim Fox's personal cell phone. But we're next up on May 7th, and the judge... The state filed a short response today. I'll file a reply to that, and we'll address this issue. I think the indictments are defective. The way they're worded are defective. And one of the indictments, I'm not going to get into all the technicalities, but mm-hmm. We'll be filing a motion to dismiss some of the indictments as legally insufficient also, probably.
All right. Well, you're a great defense attorney, and we appreciate your time. Steve Greenberg, the attorney for R. Kelly, thank you for checking in with us here on WGN Radio.
All right. Thank you.
We're going to take a break here and be right back with more as we lead up to the Blackhawks coming up.